I'd like to call to order our city council meeting of Monday, May 6th, 2013. It is 6:30 p.m. and I wonder if you could all rise and we will observe a moment of silence. And I want us to remember our friend Sue Hartman. I don't know, all of you know her as a, she was a grand jurist and she's also sat on the Parks and Rec Commission. And she's right now in a transition center. She's had some surgery and could use a little bit of goodwill. So let's remember her for a minute. And now we're going to have the flag salute, and that's going to be led by Aaron Enriquez, and he's a sixth grade student at Grover Beach Elementary School. He's 11 years old, and he says that the school campus feels like a safe haven. His favorite subject is social studies because he enjoys learning about ancient civilizations. Come on up. Aaron likes living close to the ocean and observing ocean life. His hobbies include playing wind instruments such as the trombone, flute, clarinet, and he'd like to continue playing musical instruments in high school. After high school, he wants to go to college and become a general surgeon. Aaron's accompanied this evening by his principal, Pablo Chavero, his teacher, Mr. Salas, and his parents. Where are you all? Let me see. There you are. Now, if you want to come forward and take photographs, just come anywhere you want and get those good photos in, okay? Thanks. Do you want to give us a flag salute?
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thanks, Aaron. Come on up here, and we're going to have a photograph. That's the chief over there, so we have to smile at the chief. The one with the camera. Thanks. Thanks. And the badge, the camera and the badge. So I'm going to give you that, and then also this here to help you with your homework. And if you want to start up at that end and shake all our hands, and then you can sit down.
Thank you. I appreciate
it. Thanks for being here. You did a good job.
Good luck with those instruments.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Good job,
Aaron. If you don't have the agenda, you can get that online at grover.org, or you can also link direct to the shows on grover.org so you can watch this on TV. So I've been told I have to say hi to Sue Hartman because she's watching us tonight and we gave her a moment of silence. And also now we're going to go to our roll call. I'm wondering if City Clerk, if you could do the roll call.
Here.
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 Here. And we do have a closed session announcement, City Attorney.
Thank you, Alderman Mayor, Council Members. At the last meeting, Council met in closed session on one item, that is existing litigation, Lopez versus City of Grover Beach. After reconvening into open session, there were no reportable actions taken in closed session.
Thank you. And this is the time that we do our agenda review. We'll review the order of business to be conducted. We'll receive requests for or make announcements regarding any changes in the order of the day. And then the council should, by motion, adopt the agenda as presented or as revised. Are there any changes?
No.
Okay. I will entertain a motion.
Good.
Oh, after you.
I'll make a motion. Oh, you're such a gentleman. I'll make a motion that we accept the agenda as presented.
I'll second that.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Carried unanimously. So we'll move into the ceremonial section of our agenda tonight. And tonight we're going to be doing a proclamation declaring May 2013 as Bike Month. And I believe Kevin Klein from the Regional Transit Authority is going to receive that. That's great. So I'll go ahead and read that here. And you can come on up. That's okay. And do you have something to say afterwards?
Yes, ma'am.
Great. Okay. Stay there. That's fine. And I'll read. And then I'll come out and give it to you. And we'll get a photo op. And then you can speak. And I'm doing this because I'm going to ride my bike to a meeting on Friday the 17th of May. So watch out on Grand Avenue. I'll be on my bike. And I will be wearing my helmet. So whereas bicycle commuting is an effective means to reduce air pollution and conserve energy and promotes the livability of communities by reducing traffic, noise, and congestion, And whereas Bike Month 2013 is an inclusive request to people of all ages and abilities, whether veteran or novice, commuter or recreational rider, to ride bicycles to their destinations throughout San Luis Obispo County. And whereas Rideshare will help businesses, organizations, and schools encourage and reward customers, students, and employees who commute by bicycle through incentives, awards, lockers, and other benefits. And whereas bicycle transportation is an integral part of the multimodals during May 2013, now therefore be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Grover Beach does hereby proclaim May 2013 as Bike Month and May 13th to May 17th, 2013 as Bike to Work Week and May 8th as Bike to School Day. And I'll bring this out to you and we'll get a photo up and then you can speak.
My name is Kenny, not Kevin. I wish I had the money and the looks, but I don't. So I'm here on behalf of Rideshare. I'm also here on behalf of the Regional Transit Authority and South County Area Transit. So as far as Bike Month goes, it's really a program by SLO Regional Rideshare. It's a nationally recognized and locally focused effort to encourage people of all ages, as the mayor said, and all abilities to ride bicycles instead of drive their cars. It's one of the largest volunteer efforts in the county and in the nation. So it's very, very important. Not only does it save gas, but it also is very, very healthy. So get on your bikes and ride and have a good time. I mean, you have a lot of bike paths throughout the Central Coast, especially in beautiful Grover Beach. Also, if you go to rideshare.org, each day of this month, there's a special event. And one of them was what the mayor said, you know, it's called the suit commute or commute to work in your suit or your work clothes or whatever. But there's a lot of stuff on there, and I'm sure it's very, very enjoyable. It involves a lot of businesses throughout the Central Coast, and I know you're going to have a good time with it. Now, on behalf of the Regional Transit Authority and South County Area Transit, we have a lot of things going. My boss, Executive Director Jeff Straw, will be holding mobile office hours next week on the 13th and 14th. I just finished the press release last night, so he'll be, I think the 14th will be better for South County because he'll be traveling from the Government Center in SLO down to Santa Maria and back. And Mr. Straw is really committed to transit, and he's riding the buses to get out to the people to gather South County Area Transit and the Regional Transit Authority users or ridership to take advantage of the Avila Trolley. You can take that for free 4 days a week to Avila Beach from the Premium Outlets and Pismo Beach, which is really just your neighbor. It's not too far from Grover Beach at all. And I just wanted to mention lastly, we have a Youth Ride Free program starting in June. It's where any student with valid ID, or if you just look like you're, you know, you can't be 25 and try to use it, but anybody from kindergarten through 12th grade with valid ID rides for free all summer long. So I really, really urge the youth to take advantage of transit, incorporate it into their lives, and it's a win-win. It really is. And they ride for free, just show student ID, or look 10 or 12 or 17 or whatever you want to do. And you ride for free and become the county's new explorers. And that's all I have to say, and thank you very much.
Thank you. And while you're there, it's Kenny, is that right?
Yes.
Kenny. I wanted to let you know, and I see someone else from your organization here this evening, that I sit on the board of the RTA, and we got your budget last week. And I should report this later, but I want to say it now while you're both here. I have to say that it's one of the best-run organizations I've seen. You're really committed and dedicated to what you do and to your mission statements, and your budgets look great, and I'm just very impressed with the organization. So,
on behalf of all the employees, mm-hmm. I thank you very much.
Well, and send them our thanks, too. You are. It shows. Thank you. Thanks very much. And also tonight we have with us a few notables. We have two former mayors in the audience. We have Steve Lieberman. And Steve, just wave for the camera. and very good. And also Dee Santos is here, and she's also the chair of our Parks and Rec Commission, as well as being a former mayor and school board member. But most importantly of all, we have Supervisor Adam Hill here, our supervisor. So he'll be coming to say something, I think, in a few minutes. So thank you for coming this evening, all of you. And the next thing on our agenda is presentations, and we are going to have an update on the implementation of the International Baccalaureate Program at Grover Beach Elementary School, and that's going to be Principal Chavero of Grover Beach Elementary. And someone else, too.
Yeah, I'd like to take credit for being Principal Chavero, but not today. I'm the IB coordinator. My name is Heather Englehart.
And I am Paolo Chavero, and I want to thank you all for giving us the opportunity to share some of the great things that are happening at our.
Okay, so you're probably wondering, what is the IB program? And it was originally designed for students who were living in different countries. Most of them were families of diplomats or missionaries that were moving around, and they needed a way to show that they had completed coursework and that it was recognizable among all the different countries that they had been in. So IB came together in the 60s and became this organization that had high rigor and a reputation with trackable results. So today, IB is still recognized that way and gives college credit for their coursework. Right now, it serves 3,561 schools in 145 countries, and there are three programs that the IB offers. Education wouldn't be education if it didn't have acronyms, right? So we have DP, MYP, and PYP. DP being the diploma program, middle years program, and then at Grover Beach, we are offering the PYP program, the primary years program. And IB encourages students to be active learners, well-rounded individuals, and engaged world citizens. And it also serves as an advisory committee to other educational organizations, for example, Common Core and some of the things that are coming out. Part of the components of IB is the big international piece, and really it serves to educate people in order to appreciate all people and cultures, learning a second language, having global perspectives on curriculum, concepts and big ideas that are universally important, and academic rigorous curriculum. With the concepts and big ideas, we really want students to get the idea that they may not just need to know where, for example, if they're looking at a map, where rivers are on a map, but why people would settle near a river and why that's important. So IB really tackles the why of things instead of just information alone. Another big buzzword that's in education right now is inquiry, and the International Baccalaureate is a researched organization that's helped bring inquiry into education, getting students to become thinkers and scientists, that organize wonder and risk-taking, and for students to ultimately take action, just as the gentleman before presented about bike night or biking, we also have that at our school, and we want students to be passionate about what they're thinking and being able to solve the great learner profile, but also having the social aspect of it and the caring to put those all the things that they've learned into action. And what do we want the students to be able to do? We want them to be able to search for that conceptual understanding. So again, not just taking information at face value, but being able to apply it in their everyday life. So what is IB? We have a little catchphrase, think globally and learn locally. And because IB is a world-recognized agency, we're hoping students today will look at the problems in Grover Beach and then be able to solve them confidently. Any questions that you might have?
Does anyone on the council have questions? No? Sounds really exciting. I can't wait. You got a question.
Sorry, I always have to have a question.
That's okay.
So sure. Thank you. A nice presentation. My question is, how does the IB program fit into the existing curriculum? I mean, how does it mesh in with the existing programs that's already being taught? I mean, is it additional, or is it into each classroom?
It's integrated, definitely. The the core standards are still at the heart of the curriculum, but instead of the didactic teaching methods that have been in the past where a teacher speaks and students are expected to absorb the information and they may or may not understand, we are taking the inquiry approach where students, there's action attached to that. So, for example, we have a fourth grade class who's studying electricity. And in the past, maybe the teacher would have only used the textbooks or what was available to them just in the classroom. But IB encourages teachers and students to reach out to the community. So it could be very possible that there would be a phone call out to an electrician or a parent who might have that type of connection, or PG&E that's in our backyard, and bringing those resources in to really make that curriculum much more real to them.
Okay, and if I may expand a little bit of that on that, thank you. Instead of the traditional method of teaching that most of us went through, in which our teacher has a certain amount of knowledge and they are going to share it with us, in this particular setting, the teacher is going to be more the facilitator, the coaching. And basically, the teacher is going to guide the student into that learning in the areas that they are most interested in. So they are going to be doing this self-discovery. And we are doing it through collaboration, not only collaboration locally, but also collaboration with other people that may even speak another language. For example, we are collaborating with a sister city in Mexico, with a 21st century skills that we all need in order to be successful in this present world. So going back to your question, we expand on the curriculum. We are not basically concerned about the standards that we need to cover, but we are doing much more than that, and that's the goal.
Okay. Just had one more question. I apologize. So you said you're a candidate for the program. So when? What's the time frame to be, I don't know if it's credentialed or approved into the program, so when can we see it locally?
Well, we are looking forward to be certified, fully certified, in 2015.
Okay.
So there is a process to it, and that's where we are right now. It's our first year of implementation of the program, and we are incorporating more components to it as we are going. Our teachers are receiving more training. We are also adding the Spanish teacher, art, drama, and music components for next year. So all these components are making what is required from an IB school to be certified.
Thank you. Let us know how we can help.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
You. Next, under presentations, the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments are going to give us a presentation regarding the U.S. 101 Corridor Mobility Master Plan.
Thank you, Mayor Peterson. Members of the council, my name is Jessica Berry, and I'm with the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments. With me tonight is George Aguilar, and he is with Wallace Group. He is one member of the consultant team that we have hired to do this study with us. So I'm going to give you a brief overview, and then he'll get into the technical details, and I'll wrap up with what we're doing now and next steps. So I'm sure that all of you know, but for those of you who don't, or for members of the audience that don't know, the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments is a regional transportation planning and metropolitan planning organization. And essentially what that means is that our board is made up of all of the supervisors from the county, as well as a representative from each council. So Mayor Peterson is on our board.
And I think yours is a well-run board also.
Thank you very much. Our board makes decisions about how to spend funding on regional projects. And a while back, our Transportation Advisory Committee and our board decided that we should look at the 101 corridor and make some choices about how it's functioning now, how it will function in the future, and where we want to identify priority locations for further analysis. So that's what we'll be doing. We've started this project. We actually got a grant last summer from a partnership planning grant from the state of California to pursue this project. So we've been getting measurements, which measurement tools we'll be able to use to define how the corridor is functioning. And then when I referenced the corridor, that would be the highway, US 101, as well as all the interchanges, on-off ramps. We also include parallel routes and frontage routes, those routes you would take when there's elevated congestion on the corridor, as well as transit facilities, park and ride lots, and how bikes and pedestrians interface with the US 101. So now I'll turn it over to George, and he'll get into the technical details.
Thank you, Jessica. And good evening, everyone. As Jessica mentioned, I am part of the team that is engaging in this effort for SLOCOG and for all of you. to help facilitate the study. It's a very long corridor, of course. It's 72 miles within all of San Luis Obispo County. And then you add to that the additional frontage roads and connections. It could be quite an ostentatious effort. So the first approach is to take a look at the overall corridor and make it manageable. So what we're going to be looking at is a physical inventory of what already exists. So you don't need to reinvent the wheel, start studying things that have already been studied. We'll take a look at existing travel forecasting, how it relates to the highway capacity manual to say, yeah, this is a hot spot. No, this isn't a hot spot. And then one of the key components is the public input. We have web-based surveys and web-based interactive GIS, and we'll get to the point where we'll show a little bit about the web page. It's really a very useful and cool tool. It invites people to comment and to say, ah, that's the spot where things are a problem for me personally when I'm traveling along the corridor. Next slide, please. So once we identify the spots, the areas, not just the individual spots, but the areas that kind of rise to the top from all of the input, then we're going to start taking a more detailed look at those spots, doing some simulation analyses with the traffic models. You've all heard and been exposed to the traffic models, but we'll be taking a look at the existing traffic models and looking at those spots with the updated information that's available. I'm going to compare that now to the Highway Safety Manual. And the Highway Safety Manual is unique because it correlates not just capacity, the volume to capacity ratios, the LOSs, levels of services that you all heard of, but it also takes a look at a more holistic approach. What kind of things affect the experience of people, things operate the way they do? We're also going to be implementing intersection control evaluations. That's a new term, and yes, transportation has acronyms too, ICE. So it's a new term that the state is implementing throughout all of California to take a look at a holistic approach, again, not just vehicular, but pedestrians, bicycles, transit. How does it all come together to serve the community, not just looking, again, at the more standard historical approach of level of service? Then we're also going to be looking at cost-benefit, including the life cycle costs, not just what kind of a reduction we get in the immediate for the capital improvement costs. We get back into the public outreach, and I'm going to ask my colleague to speak to that.
Okay. So as I mentioned before, we have a task force that is helping us develop what this project is looking like. And that task force is made up of representatives from the North, the Central, and the South County. So right now we have Atascadero, the City of San Luis Obispo, Pismo Beach, county representatives, the Air District, and the Regional Transit Authority are all on our task force. On top of that, we have our Technical Transportation Advisory Committee that we keep engaged in this process. So we'll be meeting with them next week and letting them know about the update, where we are, what our next steps are. So that's part of what we're doing. We have a wonderful website. It is called SLOCOG Connecting Communities. And you can either get there from the SLOCOG website, which is just slocog.org, SLOCOG.org, or you can go to slocogconnectingcommunities.com. And I'll actually show you a slide in just a moment that has that interactive mapping tool that George was talking about. So on top of the web-based tool, we're also doing press releases, general outreach. We will be doing some interviewing, intercept interviews later in the process. So, next slide, please. Actually, I'm going to have you move forward to the next slide. So as I mentioned, we have the stakeholder, or the task force. We're doing community presentations. There will be another slide on that. Public outreach, and we have a very large network of people who high voters, are high propensity voters, and other generally interested public that we are notifying about this process as it happens. And so this is that interactive tool, and it is on our SLOCOG Connecting Communities website. There are four different maps. You can click on any one of them, and it allows you to go into a location and click on it, and then write your comment about that specific location, whatever issue you have there, from 6 to 7:30. Now, if you can't make this workshop, it's okay, because that web tool is up, and you can add your comments that way. We'll be doing some interactive polling at the workshop, but all of this information is going to get put back up on the website, and this is not the only opportunity to comment. So we do want to let the public know that this is happening. We appreciate all the participation that we can get so that we have a really good understanding of people's experience with the 101 corridor and how to make it better.
Thank you. Unfortunately, I have two other meetings that night, so I'm not going to make it, and I would have loved to have joined you. Are there other questions from the council?
Yeah, you have a Transportation Advisory Committee that I'm quite familiar with. In fact, I sat on it at one time. What is the task force versus the Transportation Advisory Committee? Are they working together? Are the same people on both of them or what?
It's a little bit of both. Basically, our task force generally has people that are on our Transportation Advisory Committee, but it's not all of them. So the North County has sort of identified one person that will more or less sit on the task force, but they'll still be notified and involved at other times as well. And then we want our task force to kind of not just include the engineers who usually come to our TTAC, but we want planning, parks over at the county, a variety of people to be involved at the task force. So there's a lot of overlap, but it's not exactly the same group. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And I had a question about Caltrans. So you get all our input and all these good ideas, and then I guess Caltrans are the ones who have to implement it, and the public has to find some money. How does all that work?
Well, the good news about this grant is it is a partnership planning grant, and it was awarded to SLOCOG, but it is because we are working closely with Caltrans. So they are very involved, not just at the task force level, but we have weekly meetings with Caltrans to sort of develop how this process is unfolding. And that actually reminded me of something else. At the same time as this study, Caltrans is embarking on a sort of an aesthetic plan where they're going to look at how the corridor should look. So we're looking at how we can make those two work together at the same time. So they'll be the project manager for that aesthetic project will be at our workshop, and we'll have some specific questions about how the corridor should look on top of how it should function. And then the question about where does the money come from, we'll just have to sort of be really careful about picking those best performing improvements.
That's great. Thank you both very much. And finally, we have oh, great. Yes, that's great. Thank you. Can we put maybe some of those at that back table so the public could pick them up as well? Our next presentation is regarding the Veterans Treatment Court, or the VTC, program being implemented by the County of San Luis Obispo, and Dana Cummings, the San Luis Obispo County Veterans Service Officer, will be presenting that.
Good evening, Mayor, City Council members, city staff. Appreciate you guys having me here tonight to talk to you about this. This is an exciting project we're working on at the county level to help out our veterans, not only ones that are coming home today from Iraq and Afghanistan, but our veterans from previous conflicts as well. And so I'm just going to talk to you a little about what these guys are going through, coming back, and what they've dealt with overseas, and the ways that this type of program can help them out. So post 9/11 combat veterans, we get about 2.2 million in the country. About 35% of them or more are suffering from PTSD, which is post-traumatic stress disorder. And these here are some of the reasons why. Over 50% have received some kind of incoming fire downrange. Almost 60% know someone that's been killed or injured while in combat. Almost 50% have seen dead bodies or human remains out there. And 45% have had members of their own unit get killed in action. And just recently, in January, the Tribune did a survey. Well, it was a national survey, actually, but a job survey was done. And being a serviceman or woman is the most stressful job you can possibly be in. And that would be why. So it's kind of a some scary statistics there. So post-traumatic stress and traumatic brain injury affect at least 1 in 5 combat veterans. And those rates go up the more tours of duty they serve. So it's one in three for those that have done three tours and four tours, and it just keeps going up. The number of cases have tripled in the last 5 years for these folks. And post-traumatic stress and traumatic brain injury are two injuries that don't usually show up right away if they suffer them. I mean, traumatic brain injury should just be, this last year was the highest suicide rate ever in the U.S. military. And basically one in an active duty member commits suicide every day, 25 hours. Then a veteran commits suicide about every 80 minutes. So it's and we've had local folks here that have gone down this path. So it's a scary statistic. And the veterans rate is double the national average. So it's because of the stuff they're going through. Now, what's going on with the military? Where is it going? It's downsizing. Every time we pull back from conflicts, the military downsizes. We don't need as many boots on the ground, so we shrink our size. You know, withdrawing from Afghanistan in 2014. The Army recently said they're going to reduce by 50,000. Congress, not only with sequestration, are they cutting military budgets, but they're also cutting in other places as well. Mainly it's in personnel. And who they let go first? They're going to let go of the ones that are having a hard time. Ones that are coming back, they're not adjusting well, they're getting in trouble. Those are the ones they're going to process out and send them home. It's not going to be the stellar performers. Where are they going? Well, this map, if it goes from basically white to dark green. Dark green is where the majority of the veterans are going. As you can see, Southern California and San Luis Obispo County is down there in that lower left-hand section. Or right-hand section. they're coming here. We're seeing it in my office. We've had a 20% uptick in veterans coming in the office seeking benefits and services, and a lot of it is our younger vets coming home. So what can a VTC do to help these ones that are having a hard time adjusting, and they're getting in trouble, they're coming home, they're, you know, maybe they're getting drunk in public, or they're doing some other, you know, foolish thing they shouldn't be doing? It's a collaborative team model. It's similar to a lot of other existing courts, like drug courts and DV courts and stuff like that. It provides treatment in lieu of incarceration. The last thing we want to do is, you know, send a young serviceman who's just come home from fighting for us. He gets in a little bit of trouble, send him into the criminal justice system, get him incarcerated, and make a career criminal out of him. We want to get him his symptoms, get the cause of his symptoms treated so he can get back out. One distinctive feature of VTCs is that, we have our own acronyms as well, I guess, is it involves veteran mentors. So you take a veteran that lives in a community who is being successful and everything, and we plug them in with the veteran that's having a hard time to help that veteran through the process. Some kind of traumatic brain injury, be suffering from post-traumatic stress, have substance abuse issues, or have mental health problems that stem from their military time. So the reason why they have these issues is because of their time in service. Now, and they have to say that's why they committed the crime. So I, you know, went out and partied too much last night because I'm trying to self-medicate because I have PTSD type of situation. And one way that we can kind of track this and make sure that it's not getting used the wrong way is, you know, if the veteran has had a drinking problem before they went into service, and then it's just this ongoing thing, then we know, okay, this isn't military related. This is something you've been dealing with for a long time. So that's the way we can kind of keep them out if they don't belong. So the typical offenses, high-risk driving offenses, robberies, stuff like that. Those adrenaline rush type of offenses, they're trying to get that rush back that they had when they're, you know, overseas kicking indoors and stuff like that. DUIs, multiple offenses in a short period of time. We've had a young Marine in my office lately. He's been dealing with, you know, he had a couple DUIs within being home within less than a month. You know, that's a very, you know, typical type of thing that would happen when you come back and you can't adjust type of thing. Other substance abuse, you know, getting in bar fights, assaults, a domestic violent charge that's atypical. Guy who's, you know, been a loving father of three kids for 10 years, goes over to Iraq or Afghanistan, comes back and gets an altercation with his wife, something that doesn't always happen for him. You know, possession of brandishing firearms. So a lot of the stuff, and we're looking for the weird facts related to the triggers. You know, why is this person all of a sudden doing this, you know, odd behavior that they wouldn't normally have done? So a typical case, the defendant always pleads guilty or is found guilty prior, so it's a post-plea program. So they have to plead guilty to doing the crime, basically, before they can be admitted into this program. The offense has to be probation eligible, so it can't be something where they have to do so much time in incarceration. And there has to be an appropriate treatment available for the crime. So if it's, you know, you did whatever because you're suffering from post-traumatic stress, then there has to be treatment available for you to treat that post-traumatic stress. The treatment can be at a VA, at a veterans center, any local mental health resource, and basically any kind of program that's dealing primarily with veterans. The idea is to have that vet most anything from felonies to misdemeanors. Misdemeanors can also be dismissed by the judge if he deems appropriate. And then unless applying for a position in law enforcement, the veteran can answer no to any questions regarding arrests or convictions and stuff. So it doesn't affect them when they want to go out and get a job. Because this is the big issue as well, is, you know, you have this one issue happen, you get it fixed, well, then you can't, nobody wants to hire you because you've got this thing on your record. So it makes it a little bit easier for them. Then the last part is the kicker for them. So say, you know, you get in that trouble, you go to this program, you're successful. Well, then right after you complete it, you go back out and you do something stupid again. It comes back and it's treated as a prior. So they get the full weight if they don't keep themselves on the straight and narrow. And so it's a good way to make sure that folks stay on it. So advantages of this program, it eliminates lengthy trials and stuff. It's post-plea, so they're more apt to plead sooner. Reduces expensive long-term incarcerations. Costs about $100, $110 a day to have someone in the county jail. So if they're not sitting up there, they're not costing the taxpayers a lot of money. They're getting the treatment they need. It's a reduction in crime, less victimization. And it shifts the emphasis from the local to the federal level. So, you know, these are veterans. They fought for our country. The VA is designed to take care of our veterans. So instead of, you know, the county or the city resources being put towards treating this individual, it's federal resources being put towards it. And it gets the veteran back on their feet before they get immersed in that criminal subculture that we talked about. Bottom line, it saves a lot of money, and it saves a lot of vets. It's San Diego is a case study we used. Their first year, they had 21 participants. Their recidivism rate was at 4.1%, basically one participant. The national rate is 43% recidivism, and the California rate is actually 65%. So the program works. You know, these guys aren't criminals. They're just having a hard time getting back into society. They saved almost $1 million that first year by implementing this program. And so we're really hoping that it'll help our county as well and our local jurisdiction save as well. And our cost is very small. It's basically under $50,000 we could implement a program like this. So it's good. It's supported by a lot of organizations. Pretty much every veteran service organization in the country supports it. California veterans, California programs that support it, the Legal Task Force, the Guard, the VA, Mothers Against Drunk Drivers since the Vietnam era. And in such a tight period of time, so we're going to have a huge growth in the veterans population. Southern California, Central Coast are the two most highly densely populated areas for veterans. And the biggest thing is that veterans get rehabilitated, and our local government save money on the program for the programs. Questions.
Thank you very much. Are there questions? That was good. Questions, Bill?
Dana, very good presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill.
What is your status now insofar as being organized and ready to function in this capacity? And do you have the personnel, the means, and all of that set up now or what?
We do, actually. Right now, we're shooting for a June 14th launch date for the court. We have the team together. We have the judge. We have the DA on board, the public defender's office on board, mental health. We have a VA justice coordinator on board that's assigned to our area. And so we're shooting for, we're meeting every week as a team, just doing the final preps. We're, like on Friday, Santa Maria has one of these courts. We're going down to visit with their Judge Flores and their court and get everybody a good look at what it looks like live in action. And so we're shooting for June 14th right now for the program.
Okay. And where do you get your funding for this program?
Well, right now it's just coming out of all the different entities' budgets that are helping out with the program. Like basically 10% of one of my full-time staff is going towards this program. But the idea is that by implementing this type of program, we'll save money for all these different agencies. Mainly the Sheriff's Department will save the majority of the funds because they're not going to have these guys costing them $100+ a day to sit over there at county jail. They'll be going down to the different treatment programs that the VA provides. So even though we're all kind of chipping in a little bit up front, overall it should be a substantial savings.
Okay. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. Thank you. Really a good presentation. This is something that's very near and dear to my heart. My brother-in-law is a Marine, and
Hoorah.
He has been very involved in the Veterans Affairs here as well. So my question is, how are they referred, veterans?
Well, basically how it works is that the veteran has to initiate this process. So we have flyers and stuff up at the jail. We've been doing presentations to all the criminal justice. Mainly it'll be through, you know, interacting with them at the jail level and interacting with their attorneys.
Okay, but you have a lot of eyes out there.
Yeah, we do, actually. It's great.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Oh, just a comment. Dana, thank you. Sure. I want to say about 6 months or a year ago, 60 Minutes, that news program did a story on this very same topic.
They did. They did a great piece on it, and they really focused. The first one of these that started was in 2008 in Buffalo, New York, and they've just had an amazing program there. They've had 100% success rate, and I believe that was the focus of the 60 Minute story was that court. And you know, I don't know if we'll have that same success rate, but I think we'll have a very high success rate with the program, and they work. I mean, these aren't, you know, career criminals that this is for. This is for that man or woman who has suffered something that's abnormal. They've seen something that, you know, you and I don't see here every day, and they don't know how to deal with it, and so they're acting out. And so this is a way to kind of get that fixed early on before it haunts them for 30, 40 years.
Good. And then do you have a site or additional information that you want to give out to the public?
You can go to slowvets.org. That's our county website for the County Veteran Service Office. That has more information up there and some links. And there's a lot of ways to get other stuff out there. Yeah.
Good. And then the last question is, did you have any sort of action you were asking of the city council?
It would be great to get some form of like a letter of support or something like that from the city council. You know, it's just one of those great things to have to show that the community is behind us at this type of program. And we would greatly appreciate something like that.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. I have one other question now. How long have you been employed by the department, and how long has it taken you to get this program up and running?
I have been employed just about a year and a half, and I've been working on this for about a year.
You really mobilized it.
Wow.
That's great.
I'm trying, yeah.
Very impressed. Thank you.
We
do have some action tonight, and that is to consider whether or not we would send a letter of support. But what I'd like to do before we do that is open this up to the public in case there's anyone who'd like to comment on it. And
sure.
Go ahead and have a seat, and okay. I'm going to open to the public. And if there's anyone who wants to come forward and comment, please do that now. Thank you.
I just have one last minute.
Sure.
I didn't ask if this on agenda
thing,
and I apologize.
Yeah.
We've got a stand down coming up May 18th and 19th over at the Vets Hall. We've got these posters up at the People's Kitchen and stuff like that all over the county. And so we're trying to encourage any of our homeless at-risk veterans to take part in this event. We'll have legal advice there for them. We're also going to have showers, haircuts, dental, medical, all sorts of stuff. So I'll leave these with the county.
It affects not only the veterans that are coming home, but it affects the families, the children, the grandchildren, and everybody. So I really urge you to don't even hesitate. This needs to be done, and it will make a difference. They just need to know somebody cares. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Is there anyone else who wanted to come forward? Seeing none, I'm going to close it to public comment, and then we have some action required by the council. Did anybody have any discussion on this, or want to make the motion?
I was just going to let our veteran make the motion.
If he so chooses. Yes, let's let our veteran make the motion.
He's not even listening.
Councilmember Nichols.
Sir, you want to make the motion?
We want you to make our motion.
Absolutely. Yes, I strongly make a motion that we do provide a letter and get it out as quickly as possible.
I'll second that.
And this is a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
None opposed, so that's unanimous. And we're now moving into, and thank you so much, and we're moving into the public communication section. And this is the section where any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of the council. We'll listen to all communications, but in compliance with the Brown Act, we can't act on any items not on the agenda. So if you wanted to share with us tonight on something that's not on the agenda, we'd love to hear from you. And I do have a speaker's request from Supervisor Hill.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, Honorable Council, and staff. Adam Hill, you're a representative from the Board of Supervisors, and thank you. Thank you for supporting Dana's effort, which my colleagues and I are very supportive of and looking forward to come back to us so that we can move it forward. So we appreciate your support as well. Also wanted to officially welcome Glenn Marshall to the, since I haven't, I mean, I have personally to him, you know, and now, of course, if we get one more of our public works engineers on council, we'll just have a troika. But excellent choice and very pleased to see Glenn join you. A few things I just wanted to update you on. I had a very productive meeting about a week and a half ago with City Manager Bob Peralt, your Community Development Director Bruce Buckingham, my colleague Paul Teixeira, and our Public Works Director Pavel Ogren, and this was on how we can help move the move along with the equestrian staging area now that you, congratulations on that too, have the trail. So we're hopeful. I have a meeting this week that Supervisor Teixeira will be in as well with our airport manager and our general services folks so that we can start to investigate exactly how we might go about it. No matter what, I remain very – this is a priority for me because I know how important it is to not just your council but to the city and particularly to the region. And coastal access for our equestrians is, of course, extremely important to all of us. So we feel confident that partnering with you, we will find a solution, and we'll go from there. I know, you know, that will continue on. So I just wanted to fill you in on that. And as all of you know, I will continue to support city endeavors on a variety of things. I know as you're heading, just as we are in the county, heading toward your budget process, you know, you'll undoubtedly have some tough decisions to make. And I ask that you keep me in mind in any way that I might be able to help support community events, as I have done in the time I've been in office. I'm always happy to help out some of the things that are really important to the cultural civic life of the city, whether it be concerts in the park, our Christmas parade, those sorts of things. You know, sometimes those are the things that get looked at twice because of some essential services that have to be provided, and I want to be able to be there to help fill in the gap whenever possible. So keep that in mind. And with that, I see I'm running down, so I'll let you ask any questions or give me anything that I might take back to the county for you.
I think we can ask questions or make some simple comments. Anybody got sure. anything they wanted to say?
I just have one. Yeah. Unless you're first. Thank you, Supervisor Hill, for coming forward. I did want to ask you a question about Amgen. So,
sure.
And just because the dates are escaping me, I know
right.
it's not specifically coming through Grover Beach, but it is hopefully going to spill over economically and tourism-wise into our fine city. So if you want to give us a quick update on those plans.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Thank you. Next Thursday, so May 17th, the Amgen finish will occur, stage five finish will occur in Avila Beach, and it will be right in Front Street, right by the beach, right essentially where Joe Mama's Coffee is. And we've been planning for this for about half the year, it seems. And we feel very confident about everything. We've had coordinated effort with our public safety agencies, our public works departments, and others in the tour itself. So the only thing that we're going to find out is I also think it would be more fun to get on your bike and to come with friends. It's bike month, as the mayor pointed out when she was talking with the rideshare folks. So we expect that if you came in by anytime, the finish is going to be about 3:45, so you don't want to go anywhere near Avila about anywhere between 3 and 4, probably. Even though it's a rolling closure, you know, we expect quite a lot of interest, and there'll be, you know, a whole sort of caravan of people that go with the Peloton with the riders, and there'll be a helicopter filming. So we will see a lot of our area will be broadcast internationally. How it spills over economically, it's hard to say. Obviously, the vendors and the hoteliers in Avila proper will probably receive the most immediate benefit. But as a part of the larger county strategy, and we're talking cities included, you know, it's one of those things that helps to continue to put us on the map internationally in this regard, because this bike race is particularly, as some of you who may follow it, is particularly popular in Europe. And as you know, Avila is such a beautiful scenic area that to be able to see it coming through our area, through Santa Barbara, probably the only other noticeable places that it will come through will be in our neighboring city of Arroyo Grande. But it'll, you know, once again feature our area, and particularly even our South County area, as a beautiful place for people to come and ride bikes and walk and surf and all those other things that we like to encourage people to do. So we think in the larger picture of continuing to brand our area and to continue to show people, you know, what a wonderfully exciting place we have to visit is really where you're going to see the most. But, you know, it would be nice if we could, you know, see people, you know, coming from out of town and shopping on Grand Avenue here too. We certainly would encourage it.
Any other comments or questions?
Yeah, just a comment. I just want to thank Supervisor Hill for just the support for the community and watching out for our interests. You're doing an excellent job. Thank you.
Well, thank you. My pleasure. I'm glad to do it anytime.
So. And I wanted to say that we were so disappointed that we didn't get the equestrian staging where we'd requested it. And within 3 days, I was meeting with Supervisor Hill, and you said, I think we can help you this time. And you put your money where your mouth is. It looks like we've got a solution. If we don't have it yet, we will. So thanks for your support on that.
Absolutely.
And thanks to your colleagues.
Definitely myself and my colleague Supervisor Teixeira see this as a really important priority for our South County equestrians, aside from the obvious.
Thank you for your help with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And make sure you contact me anytime. And if Sue Hartman's still watching, call me and tell me how I can help you.
She will.
I'm happy to hear that she's
I'm waiting to hear that phone ring.
We all love her, though. So, Sue, get well. Thank you so much.
Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
Just a quick question. Bill wasn't here at our last meeting. We had a discussion about the sale of the La Grande track.
Right.
Can you talk to us about that a little bit? Mm-hmm.
There's not any negotiations or anything, you know, that have been active at any time over the last few years. My personal position is that we have an issue that we want to take care of, that we are obligated to take care of, with the air pollution that affects people on the Mesa. That's really the first and foremost important thing to work with state parks on right now. I think everybody's aware of I think there was a fair amount of closure with the recent court case in terms of the dust rule and the authority to move forward on that. We feel that will provide, I've had a conversation with the Secretary of Natural Resources, and we feel that this provides an opportunity to address the matter, which is, I should point out, is completely separate from, as far as we're concerned, separate from anything that has to do with the La Grande track per se in terms of future sales or anything like that. I mean, my main concern is that we address the particle pollution, we mitigate the dust, we work together with state parks. If state parks were to come to us to, once again, which occurred before I joined office when there was a close to a sale, we would entertain it, but I would say at this point my view is that wouldn't be something I would entertain until we felt that the efforts to address the particle pollution were underway, so that, you know, that to me that's the most important thing.
So then there was a date, wasn't there a date certain where these funds were going to go away, or
We had been made aware that there was a date that the funds that had been set aside specifically for this purchase. Some people had asked for Assemblyman Assajian's help. He wasn't able to for a conflict reason. Senator Monning, I think it's very difficult to attach a rider to a budget to ask for that. We also have been made to understand that the OHV division has enough money in its, you know, in its accounts that should it decide that it wants to once again negotiate with the county, that would be something that would be possible. I don't think that the money, but my sense of it at least is that we want to show that we can work together on the dust mitigation first and foremost, to get that underway, and then anything else that might come up we'll be happy to entertain. But that's, you know, okay. It's essentially separate, but that would be the order of things from my perspective. That's most important. Then we'll see what else is on the table.
Okay.
If that helps.
It does. Thank
okay.
you.
Thank
Thanks
you.
Very much.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Be in touch.
Is there anyone else from the public who wanted to come forward during public comment? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to close public comment. Oh, sorry. We'll open it back up.
My name is Edie Hatton, and I am a retired industrial health specialist. Work with the state of California for everyone. If anybody that has any employees working has to have an injury and illness prevention program. So when I came here, that's what I came to do, help some of the businesses to write up their safety program. So usually I come to you in a nice, you know, happy mood, and I really am again, but I'm a little bit more grateful this time to be able to thank this community, Chief, and all those other guys that are standing back there for helping us with the safety issue that we had. We had a couple of benches that I brought over to you for a few years now that have been really unsafe areas, mostly because the children that live behind these little shopping centers that walk across Grand Avenue walk across the RV park to go to school in the morning, have to deal with people that are camping out on this one bench that I gave you pictures of. And that's been an issue for quite a long time. I've been here for 21 years now. And so these guys got on it. I talked to Donna, and we got the chief, went out there and picked up the last of all the stuff. They gave permission to the owner, Mr. Grass, to remove that bench. The bench came off Saturday. So there it is. It's gone, Bob. And it's a good timing because Charlie just got out of jail Saturday. So he called me over and said, Sister Mary, that's what he calls me. He doesn't know my name. I was at a meeting with him a couple of Monday ago, I guess. And I was with them again tonight. So they're really grateful. Charlie, Mr. Charles, who I call Charlie, Mr. Chili to everybody at the, you know him, don't you, Jeff?
I think I've met him.
Mm-hmm. He helps over at the, I call him Mr. Charles. Mr. Charles is also one of the ones that helps. So we've got everybody from the homeless, temporary homeless. He's not a homeless man anymore. He works for the barbershop. Now, you know, and so these people are just wonderful. And also, I have pictures of our wonderful guys that are working on the streets. They want pictures for their children, so that's my duty for tomorrow. And while we did go out and clean the stuff, thank you for coming, Debbie.
I'm going to have to ask you to wrap it up, though, because you're okay.
Bye.
Thank you so much, Edie.
I found a candy bar from the Knights of Columbus.
Oh, well.
Actually,
thank you, Edie. Was there anyone else from the public? Okay, this time we are going to close and bring it back to the council. We're moving into public hearings. Oops. Oh, sorry, I missed you, Linda. Goodness gracious. Okay, open it up again.
Sorry about that. Linda McClure, American Property Services in Grover Beach. I want to let you know that we have formed a new group. It's called Grover Beach United. And the purpose of this group is twofold. One
is so that we can work with our city in the proper way. Too many people think it's all your fault that we don't have our streets and we don't have certain things done. And if they sit down and listen to you, they'll actually know that there's nothing you can do about some of these items. We're going to get a group together that will have regular meetings. We are going to come together to find out not what can you do for us, but what we can do to help you. And we intend to help those merchants that are having a little bit more problems on Grand Avenue be able to say, hey, you know, I don't have enough money, but I'd sure like to have a little uplift on the frontage of our units here and stuff. We're going to go in, we're going to come up with the money, and we're going to go ahead and take care of things like that. We're also going to, at the request of some of the officials, we're going to ask people to adopt their sidewalk. That's the section in front of their stores that go from one corner to certain things that are issues. And instead of this being a situation where it's a known win situation for everybody, we're going to do something now that's going to help make you, your jobs easier and make sure those that are complaining or those that don't understand, we're going to put it in their words so that they do understand. And so we have a lot of support. We have, you know, TV production. We have the, you know, Mongo's is coming in, American Property Service, several of us. I mean, there's just so many. Friends of Grover Beach, they're volunteering all over the place for us right now. So watch out for us. We're out there, and pretty soon we'll have our website up so you can take a look at it. And it's going to be a nonprofit. And anybody out there that would like to come in and help us, just give a call to my office, American Property Services in Grover Beach. It's 805-489-1236. Hit extension 0 the minute that machine comes on because it's rather winded. It's me. And we will make sure that we get answers back to you, and we will be putting out a flyer shortly. So thank you. Thank you for everything you guys do, too.
Thanks, Linda. I know you know that economic vitality is our number one priority, and so we really appreciate your help with that. And I understand, Linda, that you've adopted your sidewalk already, so you're the mother of a new sidewalk. And our next Grover Beautiful meeting will be on Saturday the 18th at 8 a.m., and folks can meet in the parking lot. And later in the meeting, I am going to read the 18 people who came to help last month, and we're very grateful for that. That's the biggest number we've had, I believe, in a very long time. So is there anybody else who wants to come forward from public comment? Last call. All right, this time I'm really closing it, bringing it back to the council, and we're going to go into public hearings, and this is the time where we're going to have a presentation from staff, then we will open it again for public comment on the items, the particular items we're hearing, bring it back to the council, deliberate, and then vote. So if you do have something further to say, we look forward to hearing from you. Meantime, we're going to move into our master fee schedule update, and our Administrative Services Director Chapman is going to be reading that or presenting that. Thank you.
Honorable Mayor and City Council, tonight you have before you a comprehensive update to the city's master fee schedule. The city utilized this and that these fees should not be borne by the general public. The master fee update has been conducted to ensure that the city is collecting fees that are cost recovery. To begin the fee study, Wildan staff interviewed city staff regarding the amount of time it takes to complete tasks associated with the various city fees. This time information, the payroll costs associated with all employees, the city budget, and the current fees were then loaded into an Excel workbook developed for our city's fees. This gave staff the costs associated with each fee charged by the city. Staff also identified new fees, which were added to the Excel workbook. These fees are also based on direct cost recovery, with the exception of the energy-saving conservation upgrades, which have been discounted by 30% for single-family residential to encourage energy-saving improvements. The master fee schedule has been rearranged to mirror the budget in the order in which the departments are presented. The fees are presented for each department in alphabetical order. Pass-through fees, development impact fees, and fees collected by waste connections have all been given their own pages in the schedule. Most of the fees will be effective tomorrow if you vote on the resolution tonight and at the start of business, with the exception of the building and planning fees, which will not be effective until 60 days following tonight's public hearing, placing an effective date for those fees as July 6, 2013. Also, one other fee for the fireworks permit will not become effective until July 5, 2013. Staff is recommending that the City Council open the public hearing, receive testimony from the public, and then adopt the resolution amending the master fee schedule.
Thank you very much. So before we open it to the public, are there questions of staff that might help illuminate the matter? Yeah, Councilmember Lee. Of course.
Always have a question or two. It's mostly just clarification questions, I believe. On I believe it's page 11, under permit extensions, it says for the first 6 months, and I'm guesstimating this is for post-building permit issuance, yes, or pull, but prior to the work being started, if I read it correctly, it says for the second permit extension, actual cost is determined by the community development director. How is that going to be determined?
It would be based on the size of the project, and he would look at the project to determine what the cost should be associated.
Okay. And so that would be, obviously a larger project has more consideration by staff.
And we've looked at the actual cost of staff time.
Okay. So I was thinking that might have been a typo, but I guess not.
No,
okay.
It's not.
Gotcha. Okay. Then just have one other question. You had mentioned in your presentation that it was based upon effectively weighting the cost of staff versus time to actually perform the work. And I noticed in just particularly for in our Parks and Rec fees with regards to cost to rent a facility, there were a number of cases where the residential rate and the non-residential rate were the same. So what was the thinking behind keeping those the same versus having a benefit to the residents? I apologize for not having the page up in front of me. Actually, one. And maybe it's just poor eyesight on my part. I
think one of them is the special use deposit, where the deposit would stay the same for a high impact function.
Okay.
That's one of them, because if you look at the Ramona Garden Park
what page are you on?
Rentals, page 20. If you look at the Ramona Garden Park rental, the resident fee is $63 for an hourly rate, and the non-resident fee is $69.
Okay. Gotcha. And I apologize for not having circled that. But then part of my potentially philosophical question associated with that is, does the rental facilities, obviously we want to have an opportunity for as many residents to use the facilities as possible. Is there any thought of including a dollar or $2 or some level of funding for deferred maintenance? So for use, for basically ongoing use of the facilities, or has that been taken into consideration?
For this fee study, no, it has not been taken into consideration at this time, but it is something we can look at for future fee studies. I now have a model that I'm hoping I will be able to work with and load next year's budget into to develop fees for the following year without having to go out and have a study done.
Gotcha. Which then leads to my last question, which, and I know in the report itself, it actually said what year was the last year we actually raised significant rates was a number of years ago.
Yes.
And so we're basically, I don't want to say catching up, but we're basically readjusting. And then is the intent to readjust on a more periodic basis?
Yes.
Recommended that the parks and recreation fees include the cost of processing classes, parks and facilities applications online. This is currently the structure in the cities of Morro Bay, Atascadero, and San Luis, and appears to be an industry trend. This should increase the use of online registrations and reservations. I don't understand. I just don't understand.
Currently, we do not have a lot of individuals utilizing the ActiveNet program. We are trying to encourage the use of the ActiveNet program. It is viewed by staff that it is of benefit to the entire public that utilizes the Parks and Rec Department to have the fees available online. So the fees will actually end up being shown at a little bit of a reduced rate, but when they pay the fee associated with the credit card usage, the fee will actually end up being the exact same charge as if they came in-house. So as of right now, people aren't wanting to utilize the online service because the fees are higher to utilize the online service.
I see. Okay.
And the other cities have recently gone to this.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Model.
Okay. I get it. Thank you. And then I had just one other question, and that's regarding the, I believe it's the last page, the fee comparison. So the fee comparison of 2,000 square foot residence. So the building valuation. So basically, when we're looking at like Pismo Beach and their evaluation of a 200,000 square foot home, is that because their valuation is more than $107 a square foot?
Bruce, please.
This is Community Development Director Buckingham coming forward on that one.
The answer is I don't know. There are two components. There is actually assigning the dollar per square foot valuation, and then you plug that into a formula as well. So all I can tell you is really just be looking at the bottom line, if you will, in the chart as far as the actual cost of the building permit issuance.
Okay, so there isn't some rule of thumb where it says basically everybody uses that same
schedules or tables, the valuation and that formula. In 1997, we continued to use that from 1997. I think other cities have done somewhat what we're doing tonight. They've kind of manipulated that to try to keep up with the times without necessarily going back and doing an entire fee study again. Mm-hmm. So the one other thing that I would add that's not in the table that maybe should have been provided to give you a bigger picture is, you know, we're talking about $6,000 or $7,000, $8,000 for the cost of a building permit in this 2,000 square foot hypothetical home. What we didn't include is that that's actually a very small or a smaller cost of the overall permit that's issued for a single family home because it includes development impact fees. And development impact fees range from $20,000 to $40,000 per unit, depending on what city you are in the county. So when you look at the overall cost of a building permit, including development impact fees, most of them, including ours, are in about the $30,000 range. So I'm jumping a little bit ahead, but when you look at this increase, yes, there is an increase to the building plan check and inspection fee based on the valuation going up. But in the overall scheme of a $30,000 permit, the $400 is, or $500 is, you know, 1.5% of the total cost.
Okay. Well, that was good information. Thank you. Thank you.
Debbie?
Yes.
Mayor?
Sure.
On that same subject, if I might, I noted that you stated that the development impact fees were previously listed and they have now been combined into a single section. And in that paragraph, you state at the end that the development impact fees are not being adjusted with this fee update. A comprehensive development impact fee study would be needed to update those fees. When do you have a program as to when you're going to initiate that and bring those up to date also?
It's not budgeted currently. I think we had an estimate from Will Dan, the consultant that did this, and I want to say it was in the $40,000 to $50,000 range. Wow. It's a very in-depth look, and therefore there's a large cost associated with it. So we have not considered that at this point.
Do you have any idea where we stand today in so far as what our development impact fees are versus what they should be, which might have something to do with whether we want to make that, put that?
I had a few questions. I'm not remembering, how much notice have we given the public on this, on these changes?
There were two public hearing notices that were placed in the newspaper.
So how many days was that? 21 days? 14 days?
14 days.
14 days. Okay, so we placed two ads
with,
so that people could weigh in on this. And then I did have some questions, and one of them was, well, what about the people who have things in progress right now, community development? So we have a big 48-home subdivision going in. What happens to him? He's obviously made all his plans based on a certain pro forma, and now the goalposts moved.
That particular project has a vesting tentative map. They are protected from some development impact fee increases. They are not protected from building fee increases. I did actually email or have a conversation with Paul Bischoff this morning just so he understood the magnitude of the increase. I would also say that we gave you a typical 2,000 square foot home. The homes in that tracker, 1,500 to 1,700 square feet, so the fee would be a little bit less because the increase would be less because the valuation is less.
Okay. How do you feel about that?
He's not here tonight.
Okay, well, I'm expecting a call. Okay. a couple of other questions. I'm going to be going to a Public Records Act seminar on Wednesday, so I'm a little sensitive to some of these things right now. And one of them was the fees on for photocopying, and I believe those were those. And I know some are dictated by state statute, and some we just work out actually what it costs us. But there's no mention in there of electronic. So if someone comes in and they want copies of records from the city, then they have to pay now 20 cents a copy. But what if they give you a CD or ask you to email it?
Part of what we added to this master fee schedule was at the bottom of each department section, any requested service not covered by the master fee schedule will be charged actual costs based on time and materials, and a deposit may be required by the city.
Thank you. I completely missed that. So my suggestion is if we're publishing this somewhere, we should probably make it similar to a notarization or stamping a document.
Okay. It's like an apostille.
Sorry, it's a...
Like an apostille.
Okay. All righty. That's a word I'm not familiar with, but sorry, sounds really official.
It's a formal verification of the authenticity of the document.
What was the word that you said?
I said apostille. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's our new word for tonight.
All right, we'll go ahead and look that up.
A-P-O-S-T-I-L-E, I believe. Okay. And I think that was all my questions for now, so I'm going to open this to the public. If there's anyone from the public who'd like to come forward, please give us your name and city of residence, and we'll give you 3 minutes. Anybody want to come forward? Nope? Okay, seeing none, we'll close public comment on this one. And
I have one more question.
Sure, yeah.
Under Administrative Services Department, the first paragraph, it states that there are new fees being requested. The new fees were developed and input based on requests from the public. I'm kind of curious as to how many people do we have coming in asking you to put in new fees?
There was a fee in particular that we did not have. We had the property management community wanted a fee for a turn-on so that they could show the property.
Huh.
So we every once in a while we get requests for things that are not in our master fee schedule.
Okay, well, thank you. That kind of struck me.
Yeah, that's funny, huh?
Yeah.
Well, that's great that they're coming in and saying things.
Yeah.
That's good.
Well, they wanted us
more
to turn on their water for free for them, and
I
said no.
I'd like that, too. Okay. Any other questions? Yes.
I'm sorry, I missed this, and I even had a post-it right here. This is on page 5. Under Administrative Services Department, hydrant meter setup fee. Now, apparently there was one that was $48, and we're proposing that it goes to $106. What is a hydrant meter setup fee, please?
When someone wants to come in and they do a development such as Mr. Bischoff's development, they ask for a hydrant so they can pull water from the hydrant, and we track the amount of water that is used. That's the actual cost to go out and set the meter. up and to take it off and get the read once they have completed the project.
Gotcha. Okay. There you have it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Another question from Councilmember Lee?
Yeah, one more question, if you don't mind. And is I know there was some discussion in the staff report with regards to how much additional fees this is going to bring in to the city.
Department came and they gave me a few suggestions, mandates, and then they had to come back and make sure I did what I said I'd done. So when you have the, I believe it was $128 fee charged for them to come the first time, when they come to make sure I did it, then I pay another $128?
What will happen is that you will be given a list, an inspection list, if I'm saying this right, Ricky, and you go off the inspection list. If you do not complete all of the items, and there have been businesses where we've had to go back again and again and again, this is basically so that we can recapture those costs of having to go out multiple occasions.
So if you do what they ask you to do and they come to make sure you did it right, they're not going to charge you twice.
That's correct.
That makes me feel better. Thank you. Any other questions before we take action? So let's see what our action request was here.
And actually, I may throw out something slightly controversial, only in the fact that based upon your question, Madam Mayor, with regards to how long it's been out in kind of the public field and how long people have had to consider it. So I know there's some, I know Mr. Bischoff notwithstanding, there's other members of the development community who might want to weigh in on some of these fees. So I don't know if we want to continue this item for until our next May meeting, in which case it basically forestalls these fee increases for 2 weeks, giving members of the public time to come back and if they haven't had time to come tonight to present their concerns at the next meeting.
Madam Mayor, if I may be provide you and the council with some information which might assist you in deliberating this. The notice, in addition to being published twice, was also sent directly to Southern California Gas Company, Home Builders Association, SLO Greenbelt, and the Sierra Club.
Good. So it's a good start. Any other comments or thoughts from?
I'll make a motion.
Well, I have one more comment before you make the motion.
Okay.
I support Councilmember Lee's suggestion because I'm notwithstanding that our council is very competent. I would feel a lot better getting through this Public Records Act seminar before I make any decisions on the Public Records Act charges. So I would feel more comfortable waiting as well, but obviously it's up to the council.
You can't charge labor for that, so can you? Well,
I think
you can answer that better than I can.
I think that public is entitled to receive a hard copy at a cost of 20 cents now is what the fee has been established in. And has a choice. And if they wish to receive an electronic copy, and if it's easier or cheaper, then there'll be there no charge or lesser charge. If it's more expensive, depending on, people have asked for Excel spreadsheets, for things that have to be loaded down and moved electronically. And for those kind of requests, which are over and beyond what the law provides for, which is only copying costs for documents that you're asking for, the city has the right to say, if you want it in that format, you'll have to pay what it costs us to give you to in that format.
So it sounds like there's a disconnect here. I know Council Member or Mayor Pro Tem Bright's working on for your own organization, you're working on a Public Record Act document, and so you understand that we can't charge for labor?
Well, now, what Martin's saying is a different thing. If they're asking for it in a format that you don't have, a format that you have to do something different than what you
normally have.
Than what the law provides for. Law provides for that if I walk in and I want 6 pages of a document that you have in existence, it costs me 20 cents a page to copy it and no labor. But if I want those 6 pages for whatever reason converted into a PDF or an Excel sheet and emailed to me, that's outside of what is provided. And if it costs the city more to do that, then I have the option of saying either yes go ahead and I'll pay for it, or no, I'll take the physical hard copies and do it myself, or whatever.
Okay.
Most of our email requests are actually with the press, if I'm not mistaken, and, mm-hmm. and they're not charged for getting email and documents.
Well, and if it is already in a PDF format, it's just much easier just to do that than it is to make a copy.
Exactly.
So if I may.
Yes, you may.
So, Gayla, when we're putting together the fee schedule, just reassure me, but I assume that all these fees are just, you're just reimbursing the actual staff time, and this is just based on historical costs.
That's all we're allowed.
Yes, exactly. We're not here to make a profit. So it is what it is. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to move forward with supporting the fee schedule. I looked through it quite extensively. I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second, and this is a roll call vote.
Yes.
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 I'm going to vote no on principle. So we have 4 in favor, 1 opposed. I'm the opposed. And thank you. We will move on to the introduction and first reading of a proposed ordinance amending Grover Beach Municipal Code Section 2401, reducing the number of Planning Commission members from 7 to 5, and our city attorney will be providing this report.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council members. Consistent with recommendation from the Planning Commission and direction from this council, this item is before you as a proposed amendment to the Grover Beach Municipal Code, which currently provides for 7 planning commissioners as a composition of the Planning Commission, for reasons set forth in a staff report and the reasons that have been discussed at length both with the Planning Commission and with this council. Staff recommends, and the council agreed, that the number would be decreased from 7 down to 5. The proposed amendment would accomplish that. If the council takes affirmative action on this item today, introducing the ordinance and setting it for a second reading at the next regularly scheduled meeting, 30 days following the adoption of the passage of the ordinance, the code will be amended formally. Currently, there are 5 planning commissioners seated, so the proposed change is not going to change or alter the current membership of the Planning Commission. With that, staff recommends that you open the public hearing, conduct the first reading by title only, and set the ordinance for a second reading at the next regularly scheduled meeting. I'll submit and answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions from the council?
I think we have
just
to
a quick one comment. Quick. I was just so impressed on Section 2401, how simple it was to change the code.
Yeah. When you have a good city attorney.
I guess so.
I did have one question, which I've now promptly forgotten. So I'm going to open public comment. Is there anyone from the public who'd like to come forward? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council. And still can't remember what my question is. Oh, that's what it was. Part of the deliberation we had when we first considered this and when it was presented by the Planning Commission was their concern.
Yes.
Okay, great. And that's really not germane to this conversation, so I'm going to stop that right there. And do we have any more discussion?
Do we need a motion?
If we
don't,
I'll
be happy to do that. We conduct the first reading of the ordinance by title only and schedule the second reading and adoption for the next regularly scheduled City Council meeting.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second, and this one is a roll call vote.
Yes.
Very pleased to vote yes.
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 Also, as a former planning commissioner, I'm very pleased to vote yes. So it's carried unanimously. And next on our agenda is the consent agenda. And this one, these are routine items that are scheduled for consideration as a group. The recommendations are noted on the agenda. Members of the audience may speak on any item listed on the consent agenda, or any council member, city attorney, or city manager may request that an item be withdrawn from the consent agenda to allow for full discussions. And items that are withdrawn will be placed and heard at the end of the items previously scheduled on the regular business schedule. Does anybody on staff, council, want to pull anything? Anybody from the public? Okay.
Looks a quick comment.
Oh, a quick comment. We can have a quick comment.
Okay. No, we can. We can make a motion first.
No, go ahead. Okay. Comment.
My comment was just to, and I don't see him in the audience tonight, but just to thank Mr. Bruner for his work on the traffic committee and continuing in that fashion.
Thank you, Mr. Bruner. Great. Good. I'm glad you did that. So then we need a motion.
Well, I'll make a motion that we accept the consent agenda as presented.
I'll second that.
Moved and seconded. And since number 9 is a roll call vote, shall we do a roll call vote on the all of them?
Yes.
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 Yes. Carried unanimously. Does anybody need a break before we go on to the next item? Nope. We're good? Okay. Regular business. We have an oral report from Councilmember Nichols and Steve Lieberman regarding the formation of a charter review committee.
Good evening, Mayor and Council Members. I was going to scream no to your motion for a break, by the way.
Speak up.
I'm a little rusty sitting through council meetings. Thank you. Honestly, thank you for considering my letter and allowing, while at the same time closely following Senate Bill 7, which I'm sure you're aware of, with bipartisan support, and then provide a report and presentation to the council, and you would take it from there. We did talk about the makeup of the advisory committee, and we're looking to pick 3 citizens at large. I'm one of them. 2 folks from the business community, council liaison, a contractor, and two representatives of the trade unions. We hope to get moving on putting that committee together shortly. As far as the timeline, it's always tough with people's schedules, but I'll be meeting with Bill and Bob again shortly. We'll invite folks to gather, coordinate, I'm thinking at a minimum of 2 meetings to try to build some form of consensus and then put that document together and present it to you. And that's all I have, unless there's any questions.
Are there any questions?
My only question is, and perhaps this was something that our city manager was going to update us on later, but do you have a specific update on SB 7 and where that's?
As I'm sure the mayor could, we met, as you recall, in Sacramento, both with Assemblymember Cacho and Senator Moaning, and believe it or not, they gave us the same indication that the bill is likely to pass both houses because of the Democratic majority. And the only way to possibly stop that would be a veto by the governor, and who knows exactly where that would go. But obviously, my guess is, as we go through this process, we'll get some indication as to what's going to happen with AB 7, before or early this summer in terms of the legislative session. And then we'll just await the governor's signature in September, or the governor's action would probably come in September.
And if I could add a little bit to that, we were advised that if we want to take any action, that we should work through the League of Cities, because they'll be able to lobby much more strongly than any of us could as individuals. So by all means, if you have concerns about Senate Bill 7, and maybe we should explain what that is, do by all means contact your legislators, which is easy to do online. Basically, the bill states, and correct me if I'm wrong, can you state it better than me, perhaps?
The city charter, as proposed and as was voted on, does not automatically preclude the application of the prevailing wage, but leaves the option open to the council on a project-by-project basis, basically. And yes, if it was shown that prevailing wage was not being required as part of the contracts issued by the city, then the city would be precluded from receipt of any funding, not just for that project, which is the current law, but for any funding from the state for projects.
Oh, we'd have to declare ourselves independent. Texas. Okay. Okay, good. We've got that one. And this is something that was discussed at the mayor's meeting also, and we did pass on the request to the League of Cities that
that they would lobby on our behalf, and they're in agreement with our position on this. So they will be taking action and want to be supportive. Were there any other questions?
I did have one hypothetical question. and in looking into your crystal ball there, Steve, thank you for doing that. Let's say, for instance, that SB 7 does pass, and in your experience on the last go-around, what would the next obstacle be, or what would be the next issue to overcome for support of a charter if we were to move forward on at the next election? Would there be any other significant obstacle?
You know, it's a great question, and I think just to kind of, if I could go back to Senate Bill 7, when you look about that it was introduced by a Democrat and a Republican, I mean, the political reality is a serious issue. There's a lot of reasons, I believe, now that I've prepared myself better, to support a charter than just the prevailing wage issue. I mean, there's a lot of things we can do. I was sitting in the council chambers listening about housing, and I kept thinking about when the Schwarzenegger administration jammed these conceptual housing numbers with no formula that justified the number and said, you shall plan for them. That's not acceptable. And there's many other things that a charter would avail ourselves to at least stand our ground until we were squashed. But I truly believe, you know, if I'm to be part of this discussion, we need to talk about things other than the prevailing wage. I mean, SB 7 does have a trigger point of $25,000, which is a small number, but there's something in there. But we need to talk about all the other benefits and see if there's consensus in our community and then bring that to you for consideration. There's my 1.75.
Any other questions?
I think it's important to have everyone who's got some skin in the game at this table, or at least be invited to participate.
I agree. So my next point is hopefully they will be people that live in Grover Beach or people who have a stake in Grover Beach.
Certainly.
That's my concern, not somebody from Santa Barbara, San Francisco, or whatever. Somebody who really has a dog in this race, or whatever that expression is.
Certainly. Thank you.
Thank you.
I had a question, too. Could you repeat again who your advisory committee would be?
Yes. Council liaison, three citizens at large, two members of the business community, a contractor, and two representatives of the trades. That's nine.
So can I ask why? My understanding is that 80% of our contractors are non-union, 20% are union. So why would you have two trade union reps and only one contractor? You've flipped the percentages.
Again, this is my perspective, and I'll serve at the will of the council. Political reality, there's money attached to political reality. And we weren't the only city to try to post a charter in the last go-around, and I truly believe bringing people to the table for an honest discussion may give us insight that we didn't consider as a community last time. That was my thought.
All right. Any other questions?
None.
Okay, seeing no more, I'm going to open this to public comment. And if there's anybody from the public who'd like to come forward, if you could give us your name and your city of residence, and hold it to 3 minutes, please.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, City Council members, staff, Steve Weiner, Tri-County Building Construction Trade Council from Santa Barbara, but represent work is here in Grover Beach area. Walt French, who's a member, business manager of the Pipe Fitters Local 403, couldn't be here tonight, and he said that he would like to be on this committee, and also I believe Tony Robles, who ran for City Council last time, we're going to talk to him about getting him on the committee, who lives here in Grover Beach, too. We're willing to work with you, and we just want to make sure that workers are protected, and we would love to help you get the charter for the reasons, except for prevailing wage and public contracting code, that you...
Steve, really appreciate you doing this, very much so. And Bill, you too, appreciate you guys taking this on.
And I do have one more question, if I could.
Sure.
How are you going to select the group?
I think there's a beer fest coming to the community. No, seriously. Obviously, this is a tight-knit community, yes. As you well know. You've lived here a long time, and as we were chatting, there were obvious people that have been really active, supportive, productive members of our community that came to mind. So we want to start reaching out to them, and obviously, at least one of the names that this gentleman shared with you was someone that came to mind as well.
Okay, so you will be part of just selecting the group.
Yeah, the three of us, I believe,
will
be part of that process.
Keep it simple. I like it.
The three of you. Who are the three? You, Councilmember Nichols,
staff member,
and
the staff
right,
member.
Right, City Manager Perrault. I guess my only final weigh in is that it is not a democracy if 20% control the 80%, and I feel that we need to have perhaps, if they're willing, because a lot won't be, but I think it might be helpful to have another contractor on board, at least a 50-50 on a 20-80 split. And to me, that I struggle with that just as part of the democratic process. And I very much want to initiate conversations with the trade unions. And I will do that personally. I'll work with you guys on that too, obviously, under your direction. But I struggle with that.
And maybe I can just offer a potential solution for that is I think there's the two businesses as well, two businesses, one contractor, two trades. I don't think Steve has precluded or any of the members have precluded one of those businesses from also being a contractor. I mean, obviously a building contractor is a business, so maybe that's a way to get that balance that you're looking
for. That occurred to me, yeah.
And also I think we're not going to be concentrating, or Steve's not, the group is not going to be concentrating on prevailing wage alone.
No, we started this process long before that argument ever came up.
Good.
It's a question of our own personalized constitution and independence. So, okay. All righty. So I guess this is a receive and file.
Yep.
So thank you so much, Steve.
Good direction.
And Bill. And the next item on our agenda is the consideration of adopting a resolution declaring weeds to be a nuisance and providing for weed abatement. And it looks like Battalion Chief Heath is going to be presenting the report this evening.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor and Council. Ricky Heath, Five Cities Fire Authority. It's that time of year again to do a weed abatement, and I'm here to ask you to declare weeds as a nuisance. We've already started inspection of the properties throughout the city of Grover Beach, and we will be putting together a list of the properties that are in violation. We'll be sending notifications to those property owners, and then we plan to have a public hearing on June 3rd. And 30 days after that, we will be doing a reinspection, and then after the reinspection, we'll be sending a contractor out to the properties that are still in violation. And at the end, we will be sending a fee to the property owners, and that fee will include the cost for the contractor, fire department fee, and also city fees.
Thank you. Any questions of Battalion Chief Heath?
Just one kind of historical question. The participation rate from when the letters go out to versus when the members of the fire authority need to go out and actually do the cleanup. Have you always had good response from those people who get letters?
Yes. Each year it seems that list of that number of people that are in violation that we need to go out and clear the lots have reduced tremendously.
Okay.
I don't know what that exact number is.
Okay. But it sounds like it's working.
Yes.
Okay.
It is.
Good. Okay.
Any other questions?
No, go ahead.
Go ahead, Mayor Pro Tem Brightfield.
Okay.
You can go first.
Thank you. I know that at one time, I'm not sure if it was last year, but maybe the year before, there was an issue where people were saying that they didn't get their letter. And I notice here it says this is the only notice you will receive in this letter. So I think that there was some kind of there was some way that we mitigated that, can you address that for me?
I believe the city clerk is putting an article in the local paper, the Telegram Tribune, that talks about this program and its process and the dates, if I'm correct. We'll make sure that something like that goes out.
I mean, I didn't just dream that. Am I not?
Well, I think
that?
You're psychic, because that's kind of my next question. Oh, okay. If no one else asks it.
Thank you.
Any other?
Just one question, and this is probably more towards staff, is why do we come every year? Why isn't this just an ordinance, the weed abatement? Why do we come back for a resolution every year?
Well, under the state law, that's basically the process, and obviously there are different parcels each year that need to be abated or need to be notified that they need abatement. And declaration of weeds being a nuisance is a annual process. Mm-hmm. Fire authority is working with all three jurisdictions to try to centralize the program. And so potentially the authority to do this, go through this process, will be delegated to the authority board. Okay. And at that point in time, they will take that off your hands.
Well, it's actually a good time, because it actually brings it into the limelight, so it's actually notification. It just seemed...
Right.
So in other words, we could write it into our charter without, and we wouldn't have to do that by state law every...
You know, depends. I don't know if that would be considered a matter of statewide concern, but potentially not. We can research that.
I don't think it's worth the time and the cost, but the fees.
Fires are a statewide concern.
Fires are a statewide concern. Any other questions? So I do. Fires are a statewide concern, and I'm wondering, do you all still have folks down on the Ventura fire, or is everybody home now?
They just came home.
Right. Yeah, I saw five fire engines going down the road, and I thought, oh no, who's going to be here in Grover? But apparently, I saw a lot of fire engines going down Grand Avenue, so apparently there were several of you still here. Yeah. Good. That's good. And I understand that this is going to be we're anticipating it could be one of our worst fire seasons. And bearing that in mind, I'm wondering if it might, I wanted to follow up on Council or Mayor Pro Tem Bright's suggestion that we do a press release. I think that we should really ask people to get involved. And the thing that brought it home to me was that there was a fire in Price Canyon not long ago, and what the Cal Fire said was, because they had cleared that 30-foot area around their property, they were able to knock that fire down quickly. Had they not, it might have been a really different story. And so I'd really like to ask you to maybe put some of that information out there, and even if you haven't already drafted and sent your letter, or if you haven't already mailed your letter and printed them, maybe in the letter you could explain that this is going to, we anticipate it may be a worse than usual fire season, and we'd really request that they, for their safety, your safety, and the safety of the public and their property, that they be a little more diligent this year than we have in the past. So I just wanted to put that out there and
yes, ma'am.
See if you'd consider that. That's up to you guys, but a suggestion.
We'll put something together.
And if there's anything we can do to help, let us know, apart from cutting down our weeds.
Thank you.
I think that's all. I guess we're not opening this one to the public, and there's no public out there, so that looks like they want to talk. So we won't worry about that this evening. Thank you very much. And this one is I'm not sure, what do we do on this one? It's a motion to adopt the resolution. Okay, let's do that then. Do we have a motion?
Okay. I'll go ahead and make a motion that we adopt a resolution declaring weeds to be a nuisance and providing for weed abatement pursuant to Government Code Sections 39560 through 39588.
I'll second.
So moved and seconded. It is a roll call vote.
Yes.
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 Yes. And we're now moving to item number 12, revisions to appointment of council members to various boards, commissions, and committees. And City Manager Peralt's going to report on this one.
Yes, Madam Mayor, members of the council. As the council is well aware, the council goes through a process annually of making committee assignments to various different countywide committees. This process usually takes place in December of each year. Which was done and is usually effective in January. The process needed to be revised as of April 1st, when we had Councilmember Marshall come on board and now it needs to be revised again, largely because County Council has advised Councilmember Marshall that he has potentially a conflict of interest with a couple of his assignments. Those include his representation on the Water Resources Advisory Council and as an alternate for Zone 3. Should also add that Mayor Pro Tem Bright had also indicated she could no longer serve as the city's alternate representative for the RAC because of work-related constraints. I do want to clarify one point in the attachment. It showed that Ms. Bright's spot for Zone 3 as being vacant, but actually she would prefer to remain the Zone 3 representative, and there's no work constraint for her there. So I just wanted to clarify that for you. The staff report is correct. The attachment needs to be addressed. So essentially what staff is recommending is that, again, you reach a consensus as to how to fill these positions, which, again, as I've indicated, include the RAC representative, the RAC alternate representative, and the Zone 3 alternate representative, and then adopt the necessary resolution. That concludes my report.
Thank you. Do we have any questions?
Such a troublemaker.
I know, you guys. Gosh, this is how many... What's third time lucky. There we go.
Third time lucky.
Okay, so speaking of trouble, you two.
Yes. I was going to say, I'll make it easy. I can't serve on either of them either.
I know. Okay,
on Zone 3. So.
Right, which does beg my question, which is, have you all now checked with County Council on, you all being you two engineer gentlemen, have you checked with County Council on every single one of your positions at this point?
No, but I only see other conflicts with SLOCOG, SLORETA,
okay.
RTA.
And I'm okay except for SLOCOG, SCAT, and South County, which we've already dealt with.
Okay. Sigh of relief. Good. Thank you, gentlemen. And
we'll make some
County
other
Council.
Trouble.
Yeah, I know you will. That's why we elected you. All right. So I just want to kind of throw this out there and see what you all are thinking. I guess we still have a kind of an imbalance because we have Mayor Pro Tem Bright is sitting on, at this point, three, as well as being Mayor Pro Tem, and she's the alternate on four, but one of those comes off. And then I have four and Mayor. Councilmember Nichols has two and one alternate. Councilmember Marshall has... four alternates. Councilmember Lee has two and one alternate. So if possible, I'd like to spread that workload. You have three. Excuse me. Councilmember Lee has three. And
in the chamber, but that's kind of a by-committee one.
Right. So who wants to jump in?
Well, I just would like to say, as far as the RAC is concerned, it's not every month that I can't be there. But these last two times when I needed to be there, I couldn't. Because that's when my agenda to my board is due, and it's due by 3 o'clock that day. And oftentimes I don't have all the information. Well, you all know what that's like. Mm-hmm. I don't have all the information that I need, and there's just no way I can be gone at 1:30 in the afternoon until heaven knows when. Mm-hmm. So that is the constraint for me with that. And so it seemed like being an alternate didn't really matter because most of the time I never had to. I didn't have to perform.
And it's six times a year. So
yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And these last two times when I had to, I couldn't. And I really just don't like us to be unrepresented like that. So so that's my story.
Thank you for clarifying that. So our options for the RAC are me, Bill, me, Bill, Bill, me.
That's it.
And quite frankly, I've got my hands full with the four I've got.
Hi, Bill.
You're not looking very keen.
I have served on the RAC in the past. I really don't like it. I'm serious. And if I have to take it, I'll take it.
Here's the consideration. We have Karen, who may or may not be able to make it every time. We have you, who doesn't want to do it. We have me, who can't do it. And what's the best of the bad bunch then?
May I ask a question? Mm-hmm. Is it necessary that we have a council member there? Do we have a staff member there? I didn't think we did, but Martin kind of had posed that question.
I don't recall. The question is it required to be a council member? Is that what the...
Or is representation... Oh, yeah. That was the question.
That's one question. I guess that's my first question. Are we required to have a council member there? If we are, then we're just going to have to figure it out.
Gayla, could you check and see if Greg is still available? He's left.
Is it... Are we required to sit on it by statute?
As far as I know, no. Not by statute.
Because wondering potentially where we're going with that, if we choose not to have an official representative, I do work closely with staff who represent RAC. I could bring in de facto updates. It just, our voice would not be heard at the meeting. But I could bring de facto updates to our council meetings.
The unofficial note for the RAC states that it is a council-appointed representative that requires approval by the Board of Supervisors. Right. So it doesn't say necessarily, at least in the piece of literature that I'm holding, but staff would gladly check into it and perhaps come back with a response that may make this easier if the council would wish to appoint a staff member, if that is possible, or potentially appoint a staff member subject to approval.
That might be the way to go.
Yeah, subject to approval by the Board of Supervisors.
That's the same for Zone 3, requires board approval, Board of Supervisor approval.
Right, but I think we have a Zone 3.
We're okay on Zone 3, right. Oh, okay. Yeah. That was the one that... We still need an alternate on Zone 3. We have Mayor Pro Tem Bright on Zone 3.
Yes.
But we need the alternate. I know that that our Public Works Director has really got his hands full and over full, and so I hesitate to do that. And I guess really the decision as a council that we have to make is what's the best representation for the city? And what's the best representation for the people we're representing? So we don't have any really good answers right now. Mm. It's 6 meetings a year, although, as you say, they can be quite long.
They're not that long. The ones I've been to aren't that long.
Okay.
But they just happen to be, for me, at the...
Bad timing.
Really the one of the worst times.
And it does say council appointed, so it doesn't actually need to be staff or council. I mean, we could have, if we have an interested member of the public.
That's another option. Or a member of another commission, if there was a planning commissioner who was interested.
Right.
The next meeting is May 8th. So I think we need to have somebody there May 8th anyway, although they may not have been approved by the Board of Supervisors at that point.
Right. They could not take the seat officially until approved by the Board of Supervisors.
Right. And May 8th is 2 days from now. Is May 8th one of your difficult days?
It's
our second Wednesday.
It is the second Wednesday.
Right. The first was the first Wednesday. So the May 8th is Wednesday.
I'll have to see what I can do.
Are you... you have you have to prepare an agenda item?
No, I don't know. I have to think about this.
Because we have no alternate.
I know.
Yeah. Okay.
At this point in time, we have no one but me. Mm-hmm. So I'll check and see.
And I'm out of town on the 8th, so I know I can't do it on the 8th.
Madam Mayor, mm-hmm. what is the, for this meeting, what's the time again?
1:30.
I will go ahead and volunteer as a staff representative to take it. It's in the afternoon. My afternoon is free on the 8th.
And when you do that, could you maybe just give it some thought and come back to us with a recommendation on how best to handle it? I'm just feeling kind of stuck right here because we've got, at this point, we don't have any really good answer for this one.
Sure.
We don't have a good answer. We can probably come up with an answer, but maybe not. So let's set this one to one side for right now, and because I would certainly be willing to do the alternate, but not if that means I go to all the meetings, because I might as well be number one then.
Exactly.
I don't want to be.
When I couldn't, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, when I can, but that just, as I said, hasn't been working, so.
Okay.
Okay.
And what was the other one we needed to deal with?
Actually, it's the Zone 3 alternate.
Zone 3 alternate.
And I would prefer, if staff's preference is that that be a council representative, because it's really a policy-making mm-hmm. Group and deserves an alternate from the council.
Okay. And again, on Zone 3 alternate, that's between Councilmember Nichols and me.
I can take that.
Okay. Thank you. All right, so we've made one decision. Are there any others we need to make on this? That's really just it, isn't it? Those two.
Those two, okay. Unless just to give Councilmember Marshall something to move him from an alternate to a representative seat, I'd be willing to switch places, shall we say, on the Homeless Services Oversight Committee, unless there's someone who wants to take on that. Or the visit San Luis Obispo County, although that is a right. fairly fun one.
Yeah, I never wanted to give that one up.
Exactly.
How do you feel about that, Councilmember Marshall?
Oh, that'd be fine. That'd work out
okay.
great.
Thank so you. We'll switch you and Jeff on the Homeless Services Oversight Council.
Okay.
You'll be the main representative, and Jeff will be the alternate.
Sounds good.
Great. Okay,
thank you.
That balances it out a little bit more. And any other suggestions on any of this? I know, Karen, that I spoke with Glenn over the weekend, and he said if it would be helpful, he would be willing to take on the Housing Trust Fund as the main representative. But it sounds like it's not that you don't have time, it's just the specific time
yes.
you don't have.
Mm-hmm. The Housing Trust
right.
Fund isn't a problem.
Mm-hmm.
It just
okay.
that doesn't fall... That isn't a problem.
Right.
Okay.
Hasn't
okay.
been.
Great.
But thank you. I appreciate that.
Sure.
Okay. So what we have now is city manager is going to head off to the Water Resources Advisory Committee on
Thursday the 8th.
Wednesday the 8th. At 1:30.
Wednesday the 8th. Excuse me.
And come back to us perhaps at our next meeting with some suggestions.
Yes.
We can all... give it some thought, and Councilmember Nichols is going to be the alternate on Zone 3, and on the Homeless Services Oversight Council, Councilmember Marshall is going to be the representative with Councilmember Lee as the alternate. Do we need a motion for this? Yeah, it's a roll call vote, I believe, isn't it? So we need
a resolution.
Pardon?
It's a resolution.
Motion? Yeah. A resolution. Okay, so we need a.
So I'll make a motion that we approve that resolution as. Noted for committee assignments. Does that work?
Second.
So moved and seconded. Could we have the roll call, please?
Councilmember Lee.
Yes.
Yes.
Councilmember Marshall.
Yes.
Councilmember
Nichols.
Yes.
Yes, and that's unanimous. And we're now moving to council committee reports. And Councilmember Bright, you are number one here again. Looks like this is alphabetical. Did you have anything to report? Looks like you might not.
Let's see. Where am I? I have the Housing Trust Fund this week. I did take the EDC meeting while you were away.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I don't really have much to report back on that, although I did though, report out about our lodge conference center, and we had a lot of congratulations about that. So I think that's really all that I have to report. Thank you.
Thank you. Council Member Lee. Council Member Lee.
Nothing specific to report. I think everything's up to date. The two things I'll update you on is the Chamber of Commerce is sending around a mailer to because they're moving forward with banners up and down Grand Avenue. So if anyone wants to participate in that program, contact the Chamber for that. And then for the Visitors and Conference Bureau, the Saver tickets are on sale. So they are having a weekend pass for $100 that covers the entire weekend to the main event. And on their website, which www.visitslow.com, I believe it is, or might be .org, is you can get tickets through there. And they also have all of the breakout sessions for that as well. And I believe the new website goes live this month. Mm-hmm. And then moving on to the IWMA, Integrated Waste Management Authority, that meeting is on Wednesday. And in looking through the agenda, nothing earth-shattering with the exception that they are considering, it's on the agenda to consider a stipend mm-hmm. for the representatives. So if you have any feelings strongly on which way we should vote or participate on that, let me know, and I will bring that with me.
Thank you. And I wanted to mention, and City Manager, if I'm incorrect on any of this, let me know, that the Chamber of Commerce has worked really hard on those banners. I understand that they've identified that we had a number of poles that were damaged and mm-hmm. needed to be repaired, and they've taken it on themselves to cover the cost of repairs and replacements and get banners in place for our Stone Soup Festival. And that's a huge task, and it's really been a wonderful service to mm-hmm. us. And they're going to manage to cover the cost, I believe, through the cost of the banners, and they just figure it's good business. So I think a huge thank you to Judith, the chief executive at the Chamber. She's really gone out on a limb for us there.
That's great.
And Bill Nichols, anything to report?
First off, I'm sure you're all aware because you received an email from our attorney that Chief Arenas has left the fire authority, and we now have interim Chief Mike Huber, who is back to serve. That's happened just over this past weekend. So we'll have more to report on that at a later date. The Regional Transit Authority, or SCAT, meeting was held. We did pass the 2013-14 budget. And I will say that as we progress this year with the budget, they have used only 55.7% of their budget, and we're 66.7% through the year. So they've done very well budget-wise so far this year, and it looks like we'll come out very well, which is one of the reasons that the new budget went through without any real problems. We're also working on a passenger code of conduct that will be before the board at the next meeting. The initial draft has been presented, worked over, so the final will be presented at the next meeting. The rest of the SCAT information you heard from the young gentleman that was here earlier. So the other, do you want me to give you a rundown on the school that I went to? You want to do that now?
Sure.
Okay. We were back at the National Emergency Training Center, which is in Emmitsville, Maryland. The Emergency Management Institute conducted a course that was titled Integrated Emergency Management. There were approximately 72 persons from San Luis Obispo County that were taken back there for this exercise. All of the expenses, with the exception of our food, meals, all of the expenses were covered as a result of a federal grant that was applied for, which was received, and that was Dave Matthey, who was with the fire department, who has since retired, submitted that application for the grant was received. Each of the members that went back paid for their own meals, which were provided on the facility. The facility, incidentally, is a former Catholic girls' college. Wow. And it's the Federal Emergency Management Agency headquarters, and it also has the National Fire Academy located there, and they have a National Fallen Firefighters Memorial, which is quite impressive. So the whole area was very impressive. The facility itself was excellent. Everybody there had their own private rooms. It's similar to a large hotel, but it's composed of quite a number of buildings. I believe there are probably at least 14, 15 buildings. I did some math on that, and that facility can actually house approximately 400 students. And our contingent was, as I mentioned, only 72. There are also other schools going on at the same time. The National Fire Academy has schools that go there, plus FEMA. But it was excellent, excellent school, excellent course. It was set up as an exercise in which a tsunami hit the central coast. The tsunami was a result of a 9.2 earthquake that occurred off of the coast of Alaska. That earthquake occurred at approximately 2 p.m., and it just so happened that it was on July the 4th that it happened, and you can imagine the number of people that were visiting all the beach areas in the central coast when this earthquake occurred and the tsunami hit. That was part of the built into the exercise. And keep in mind that we worked in a condensed frame. Other words, they started the action, I believe the first part of the tsunami hit the central coast at approximately 6 o'clock in the evening. So, but we were working on a time frame where within 2 hours, we handled probably 10, 12 hours of actual events. So it was interesting, but it was very realistic. Prior to the actual tsunami hitting, when we got back there, we went back on a Sunday, a Monday, and Tuesday morning, most of the day Tuesday, we were in class. They had instructors, excellent instructors. Almost all of them have been with the agency, FEMA, or the Institute, for quite a number of years. It was very interesting to listen because they, almost every single one of them have been through the New Jersey problem when they were hit by the flood. Most all of them have been through the New Orleans flooding that occurred, two of the major incidents that they had been involved in. So they know what they're talking about. It was really interesting to listen to these lectures that we had. Very, very well done. The first phase of this exercise started late Tuesday afternoon. By Wednesday morning, we did the first part of the tsunami hitting late Tuesday afternoon. Wednesday morning, we were back in the classroom for a couple of lectures. Then we go back into our emergency operations center. I was in the policy-making group. There were, I believe, seven or eight in the policy-making group, the mayor of Pismo Beach, the city manager from Pismo Beach, myself, city councilman from Arroyo Grande, one person from the county, and, in fact, Jim Hogaboom, superintendent of schools, was also on that policy group. And I will also say that when this thing happened, the head of the Emergency Operations Center was Jim Copsey, our chief of police. And I can tell you he did an outstanding job. The Wednesday morning, As I mentioned, we had two classroom sessions again, then moved into phase two of the exercise. We had lectures again Thursday, and then back into the exercise. Thursday, we were into the recovery portion of the exercise by then. Late that afternoon, we were all back in the classroom for a critique and a discussion. During the exercise, there were things that happened, such as Morro Bay, Pismo, Grover Beach, and Oceano were all underwater. Pismo was underwater up to Dolliver. Grover Beach was underwater up to 4th Street. Oceano was underwater up over Highway 1. And Morro Bay, the whole bayfront down there was underwater. So those were things that we had to contend with. The events that were thrown into the mix by the staff shortly after the tsunami hit, the operations center started the evacuation procedure, and they had no more gotten evacuation underway than we received a bulletin that a school bus loaded with children had overturned on Highway 101, which was the main exit for the evacuation. So there were a number of incidents like that that were thrown into this mix as we continued the operation. We also had periodic news briefings, and that was handled, I believe all of them were handled by our group, Mayor Higginbotham. Oh, also Supervisor Paul Tresera was in our group also. And between the two of them, they did most of the television appearances. We actually had a setup where we had a station set up. There was a newscaster in there who was doing the broadcasting, and we would go in periodically, and he would say that we now have an update on the effects of the tsunami or the recovery, whatever phase we were in at that time, and somebody from our group would give an update on where we were and what was happening and the cooperation we were getting from all the agencies and so forth. So they kept it as realistic as possible. Overall, it was an outstanding exercise. I really think so. And I would like to, and I've asked Jim Copsey if he would be available to give you a little bit of what he experienced as the head of the operations center.
Great.
Jim?
Thank you, Bill. And he's way kind in that. I don't know how good I did because they fired me after the first day. actually, we traded jobs, but I felt like I got fired. Yeah, Bill pretty much covered the trip. It was I concur. It was an excellent trip. As we look back on it, there was some frustrating things as we go through this. And in working through that, we learned a lot. As you know, nothing goes perfect, especially in emergency. And one of the first exercise that we did where they dumped everything on us, it was supposed to have been a 3-hour, 3.5-hour exercise, and we had an hour and a half left at the end of the day. So they said, "Oh well, let's do it all in an hour and a half or 2 hours," as Bill said. And so we just got bombarded with everything, and really nobody knew what to do because we'd never been in the EOC before. Because they had this mock EOC, and we had
what's EOC mean?
The Emergency Operations Center. Thank you. And of course, we had all these chiefs, and city managers and council members that are all Type A personalities. And then you go and you try and organize them, within 5 minutes to get them to do something. And so it was quite chaotic, but it was very realistic. And what was interesting is, and I learned from one of the evaluators that they were actually very impressed with our county, as we worked as a county. This was a county exercise, not just Grover Beach. That I think one of the comments they made is we were much better equipped than most people that go to the school, because we had quite a few people there from the county emergency operations center and the county people that work there and all the people that were there. So it was actually, we did get some compliments in what we did. After the first exercise and they fired me, it actually went a little smoother. But what was most interesting, and we exercise quite a bit in our county because we do have, and this is one of the benefits of the Diablo, the nuclear power plant, is we do exercises very frequently, and we participate in those. And so we kind of know that. But what's interesting is we drill on the event. you know, the earthquake happens or the tsunami comes, because we've done tsunami drills. We haven't really drilled on the recovery aspect. So that was actually very beneficial for a lot of our county people, me included, that, you know, on what do you do in the recovery? The next, after the first 12 hours, what do you do then? How do you get the funding? How do you get, you know, we've done the proclamations and everything like that, but how do you get the, you know, people back into, you know, their homes? And we kind of went through that. And it was interesting to watch the policy group. And, Bill, I don't know if that was really done before. I don't think we've done that here in our city. Having the council, the policy group, setting the priorities of what the community needs, how the businesses get back to full thing, how do we get revenue back into the city. And that was actually a really good part of the exercise for me. So that was kind of interesting. What I did kind of realize, though, is we had an opportunity to look at some of our emergency plans, and ours is, by the date, is a little outdated. It was done a few years ago, but it's actually not all that bad. And the county's gone through ours. Ours mirrors a lot of what the county's done, our tsunami exercise plans. But it was kind of interesting that I really feel confident that if we had a major event, even this magnitude, all this was one of those hypothetical things that really probably won't happen, but as one of the instructors said, Bill, is probably one of the biggest comments I learned from it. Sounds kind of saying, if it's possible, it's possible, right? Is what he said. So I think it will happen. It could happen, and we need to be ready for it. And we continue and will continue as a city to participate in exercises. And I've talked to the city manager, and we've actually talked about doing our own tabletop type of an exercise. I just completed our nuclear power plant budget for next year. We're going to participate again, as we have in the past few years, with putting together an exercise. And I think this time we might incorporate some of the, at least I'm going to try and look at some of the recovery aspects maybe in the second part of that. So I think it was a good process, and it was really, I think, a good process for everybody in the county to work together. Not everybody, because it was only 70 people, but a majority of the people, if there was an event of that magnitude, would be working together. And so it was kind of interesting to be able to do that. And I think I'm real confident that we're ready. Should something happen, we improvise very well together and make things happen. So I know it was a good time.
Absolutely.
And some good crap.
Absolutely. Let me just tack onto that. We did put together in the policy group what we needed to do insofar as the recovery was concerned, and we created a mission statement, which was to provide an overarching statement for the group that leads into our supporting objectives. And we came up with to restore the economic, environmental, and social qualities of life in the region. And then to supporting the objectives, we, in order to restore things that we felt that were most important, was public safety, health, welfare, environment, infrastructure. And moving on beyond that, we set some goals, which were economic revitalization, public services restored, back to home, works, and school, those three places. Visitor serving had to be revitalized. We had to mitigate the agricultural impacts, maximize public and private reimbursement and funding, and protect the health safety of the responders and our expectations. We had needed documentation, and we needed communication between the affected jurisdictions. Those were what we came up with in that policy group. So we did put together some pretty good thoughts and worked very well together. I was impressed with the entire operation. From the operational personnel, we were in a separate room away from them so that we could function as a control organization, so to speak. But yeah, it was very worthwhile, really enjoyed it, and I'm glad I had the opportunity to go.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Does anybody have any questions of Councilmember Nichols? No. And I think, again, a huge thank you to the Five Cities Fire Authority for pulling that together for the whole county, and also to the 70 people who attended. And for me, it raises something which has been a concern for quite some time, and I think I started first worrying about it when we had our tsunami almost 3 years ago now, 2.5 years ago, and that is you know, what is it that we as council members can do to be most helpful and supportive? I don't know the answer, and I need to know that answer. So I talked with, at the mayor's meeting, which I've mentioned previously this evening, we talked, we had a small report on it, and I've heard nothing but really good reports. And I heard from the mayor pro tem of Pismo that every quarter they have an exercise. And so I'd really like, with everybody's agreement, to agendize a little bit of help or a workshop or something, so that as council members, should something occur, we know what we need to do and how we can best support. So is everybody okay with that? Agendizing that or doing a workshop or something, and leave that at the discretion of the chief and the city manager maybe to figure out? Okay, good. Got consensus. Now I'll know what to do. Thank you, and so will you. And we won't be relying on Council Member Nichols to tell us what to do, although I'm sure he's qualified as an old Marine. Okay, back on track. I think I'm next. I have an awful lot to report, and so we're still finishing off committee reports here. Air Pollution Control District did meet prior to this meeting. I believe it was, prior to our last, we haven't talked about them yet. And we did have some issues with numbers for our greenhouse gas emissions toolkit, and that's being addressed. And thank you to our the chair of our planning commission. He actually caught that, and so there's some issues there being addressed. And the last half of their meeting was erased, so we're going to go over some of that stuff again at our next meeting. But I don't think there was anything too huge to report on that, apart from those two things. So if you missed it the first time, you can come back and get it again at the next meeting. San Luis Obispo Council of Governments did not meet last month, but on the 1st of May, but San Luis Obispo Regional Transit Authority met, and we heard a lot about that this evening, so I won't say too much, except that they just do such a great job of their budgeting and their management. If you ever want to, if you want to know how to do a good job of running an organization, go read their staff reports. It's only 107 pages. South Slo County Sanitation District, we had an incredible meeting last time. We've got some fabulous consultants in. They came up with a 20-page budget that was easy to understand, easy to evaluate, and they're now looking to bring on board a financial expert to help them determine how to move forward within the financial framework that we have. That was extremely encouraging. And let's see, that's all on those. Then I guess let's go on to city council member items. And does anybody else have any other city council member items apart from yours from Sue? Okay, that sounds good. Any other council member items?
I just had one. I'm not sure if it's here or in under council communications, but I know that the People's Kitchen is going to be either the church is going to be moving out of there relatively soon, and so they're either going to be looking for a new home or whatnot. And so I'm not sure if the chief or the city manager has had any communications or have heard.
From the management office, we haven't had any direct communications with them. So if they're out and looking for a new location, it hasn't been brought to our attention at this point.
Okay. Then I think from I happened to stop in and talk with a gentleman there, and was gonna, if there hadn't been any communication, was gonna give Betsy a call just to see what their plans are.
Good.
And hopefully I'll have an update for you at the next meeting then.
Okay.
Just to see if what they've got planned.
Thank you
and
for following up on that.
Necessary.
Yeah, that's important. Thank you. I have a few things to report. I've mentioned the mayor's meeting. There was one other thing that came up. It was a very productive meeting, and this one is I need to have the chief hearing me on this one. The mayor of Arroyo Grande has concerns because his crime stats for the first quarter of this year are significantly higher than the first quarter of last year, and he asked if we could, if you would be willing to provide a report on the crime stats comparing quarter on quarter, and pass them over to the chief in AG. So I don't know if I'm allowed to ask you to do that, but if that's not too difficult, they've asked us if we could provide that. And also on that meeting, we heard a presentation on the charter and Arroyo Grande's progress, and they are so organized. I'm so impressed. They have this huge binder, it looks like this, of stuff, which I tried to take away, but it belonged to the city manager, and he wouldn't let me have it. So he's going to prepare a binder of what they've got to date and make that available to you and Steve. Yeah. So he thought they'd have, he said he could even get it for this meeting, and I said, no, that's okay. We can hang on till when, he's going to do it Wednesday. So I guess that'll probably be delivered to the city and it could be passed on to you. Also, we already mentioned also that we took a trip to Sacramento. City manager drove for about 10 hours, did a great job. And in Sacramento, we met, we actually had effectively four meetings, or three, four. We met first with Kacho Ashajian, and we talked with him about our concerns about Senate Bill 7, and he said, good luck, talk to the League of Cities, which I've already mentioned. We also talked with him about our charter city, and talked with him, too, about our letter requesting some support with entering into talks or asking state parks and the supervisors to consider reallocating or purchasing the La Grande tract. And so, again, Cacho, unfortunately, is unable to weigh in on that because he owns three gas stations and he may actually have $2,000 worth of business on the 4th of July from OHVs, off-highway vehicles, so he can't weigh in on that. But we had a really interesting response from Senator Monning. And to date, he's kind of sat back and we felt that he's just taking it all in because he doesn't know us too well. Well, in this case, he got very excited and his people got very excited and said, oh my goodness, Senator Monning used to be a mediator before he got into the legislature. And so he's very keen to get involved and see if we can't find some ways to clean things up a little bit and get things more friendly out there. So that I was really, really pleased at his response on that one. So we had the meetings with Senator Monning, meeting with Kacho Ashajian. It was a legislative action day for the League of Cities. And Representative Ashajian sits on the local committee. Local government committee. And so we were able to go into one of his committee meetings, and I actually got to stand up and say that we supported the bill which tells the state that once they give the Department of Finance, that once they give us an answer on dissolving our economic redevelopment agency. Once we get an answer from them, they have to stick to their answer and they can't keep jerking us around. So I stood up and said, we support that. And I have to say it was extremely encouraging to be at the Capitol this time because it was busy. There were people everywhere. There were groups of kids. There were groups of people with T-shirts. And it was noisy and active. Although I know we all feel very frustrated with the state, to actually be there and see things in action made me feel better. Because people are involved and they are doing things and they are taking part. And it convinced me that in the same way that we ask the public to take part with us and get involved and make noise and tell us what they think, that we have an obligation to do that at the state level. So I was very glad that you drove for 10 hours. Thank you. And the final meeting we had was with the new deputy chief of state parks, Chris Conway, and He was a great guy, very enthusiastic, very positive. He's going to get right on it. So I think we're going to see some great things coming out of state parks. I'm very encouraged by that. And then we didn't mention that the general came to see us too, communications. And since I have the floor, I'm going to just hang on to it right now. I promised I would list the names of the people who helped with our Saturday morning Grover Beautiful last time. Is 18 the most we've ever had? It was a big number.
It's a big number. We may have equaled it when we first started.
Right. So our goal next time is to have more, and I can't be there because my nephew's graduating in Fresno in the Valley. And so someone else is going to have to be there because I'm not going to make it, and I'd love to see our numbers bigger. But I wanted to run through this. We had Larry Connors, Friends of Grover Beach, Dr. Kathy Smith of Oak Park Veterinarian, Ben Noini of Ben's Computers, Shelley Pratt, Edie Horton, Gage Horton Hatcher. Wow, I didn't know he had three names. Joanne Wolstenholme of Nail Divas, Valerie Mercado of Noble Productions, and City Manager Peralt. And we also had Eco Rotary was there, and they painted the wainscoting. Is that what it was?
No, actually, you had two Rotary groups. Eco Rotary was down at the depot working on the landscaping, and then the Grover Beach Rotary was actually doing the wainscoting, and there was about six or eight volunteers over there.
That's
doing
the great.
Wainscoting inside the Ramona Garden Center.
And then Brenda Alver was there, too. And I think that was also thank you to all of you. And let's increase those numbers next time.
It's on my calendar.
Yep. Oh, good. Jeff's going to be there. Yep. Good. So you had a council communication?
I wanted to say thank you to our city attorney and his wife for opening up their home as we went down to Moore Park for the League of California Cities meeting. So thank you for that.
Yeah, forgot to mention that. That's another thing we've been doing. It was nice, yeah. Any other, did you have a council communication?
I did. Actually, now that I think about it, I think Debbie and I also, we met with Lois Capps.
We did.
Did you want to talk about that?
No, go ahead.
Information in front of you, I don't.
You know, what we do whenever we meet with folks is, and they've been really appreciative of this, is the city staff prepare a letter of the things that we, of our concerns, and I have to tell you that I guess that doesn't happen all the time. And they said it's really helpful to have something to go back with. So, Representative Capps contacted me and wanted to meet with me, which was really nice. And so we met at the Rib Line, and we were able to show them some of the money that we had ring and ask Slocog, which I think we all do with great regularity. So was there anything I missed there? Thanks for reminding me.
No. But I thought it was very productive.
It was. It was a good hour.
Yeah, definitely was. So, and I just had one other communication, and that was Sue Hartman, who we already discussed earlier, a former Parks and Rec commissioner and former grand jury member. She had a really great experience. One of our local businesses, Margarita's Pizza, her grandson had gone in to get her a pizza because she is in this rehab facility and has been there for a while. And Margarita noticed that Sue had been around and noticed her absence and insisted that her lunch be free. And so anyway, I just thought that was so nice that we live in a community where our businesses actually notice when you don't come in for your regular pizza or whatever that is. And so anyway, Sue wanted me to let everyone know how great it is to live in a community like this. So
thank you.
Thank you.
Do we have any city manager reports and comments?
Just very briefly, and it's related somewhat to AB 564. As you'll recall, referenced in that bill was the finding of completion, and that once the city had received a finding of completion, the 564 would keep Department of Finance from coming back at us again. I did want you to know that, and I think I had indicated to you maybe in a Friday letter, that we have received our finding of completion. It is, again, due to the Administrative Services Director and all her efforts in getting that accomplished. We're one of 100 agencies throughout the state that has received it. It should mean, I underline that because it doesn't mean will, but should be eligible to receive the interagency loans. We should be able to get those repaid back since we have a finding of completion. We'll begin to list those on our obligation schedule and proceed with the process, hopefully to get those recovered.
Great, thank you. And I wanted to say, too, we do have a closed session. Can you announce that for
us? It is the intent of the City Council to meet in closed session on two items tonight, first one being existing litigation, Santa Maria Valley water litigation, and the second one being labor negotiations.
Thank you. So we're going to recess into closed session.